to respond effectively. She runs the risk right now of being swept away. She made a strategic blunder with the calendar, and she's been tone-deaf on the campaign trail. No one wants to vote for someone whose main pitch is, I've earned it, and I've got more money than the other candidates, so I'm unstoppable. And now, thanks to the jimmying of the calendar that her own people designed, she may not have enough time to retool. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the program. Yeah, the intro's a little bit weird, not the least of which, because there's no announce voice. But you know what? We'll be okay. What it boils down to is, as I mentioned last week, it's time for us to do some redoing, because, in fact, we have a new partial sponsor to the network, the fine, fine people at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net. Go there. Join them. Membership is cheap. Be part of the fight to save Appalachia. You don't even have to live in Appalachia after all. So we're working up some new imaging for the network. And, you know, this is this is the intro. Same old intro. Different copy. And we'll have everything nice and normal before too awfully long. I'm sorry about last night. Sorry I wasn't here. It wasn't for want of wanting to be here. I'm Bob Kincaid, by the way, for those of you who have never heard the program before. What has happened is, I've told you in the past about the great big honking beast of a machine, the computer that we built here. I did the physical stuff, and Peter Godbold, the world's most fabulous IT professional and world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, did the skull sweat part of it, and we got the thing built, and I brought it online because things were getting kind of crippling with the old machine. And I started loading stuff in and getting it ready to go Saturday, and then by Sunday we were pretty close to done, but then there are certain databases that have to be reconstituted, and that took the biggest part of Monday, and we weren't even done by showtime last night, so that's what happened there. So I beg your indulgence and offer you my humble apologies for not having been on the air last night. Again, it was not for want of trying. We will be here all week, though, and, you know, thank the flying spaghetti monster the holidays are over. Now we can get back to work, you know, because from Thanksgiving to New Year's, you can't get anything done. Yeah, I was here mostly. I mean, I didn't take any extended vacations or anything. Yeah, Monday and Tuesday of each week there at the holidays, but that was about it. And as a consequence, you know, your rhythms just get thrown off, and it's time to get back into the groove, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, I got my groove back. So hopefully, you know, next week we'll have a normal schedule, a normal schedule after that, normal schedule after that. There will be no Strictly Confidential tonight because Peter Godbold has some issues that he himself is dealing with. Okay, I'll tell you. He wrenched his back, and his lower back is just creating misery. He can lay down, or he can stand up, but he cannot sit in a chair and yakety-yak for 2 hours and expect to do a meaningful program. So, you know, there you have it. But he'll be back just as quick as his back feels better. Okay? Promise. Now, I want to mention something at the top of the program, especially for folks who didn't hear last week when we were back for the new year. Our good friend and horn psychologist, Rick Goodner, has made an offer to everyone who listens to the horn. He has said, because he and I were talking about where we want to go with the horn, and, you know, I mentioned the fact that we need to build a studio where we can do better video, well, do video in. We're not at better because we're not doing any yet. But he offered to match every single dollar that comes into the horn this month and to put that into the new studio building fund, a level of generosity that I find simply stunning. So far, I was telling him earlier today, he's on the hook for about $500. So the more that the monthly contributions go up, the more likely we get to start on the studio sooner rather than later, which I would find incredibly cool. So, you know, if you never have contributed to the horn and you're thinking about it, there is no better time to do so than now, because you'll actually double your money and be taking affirmative steps toward doing something significantly beneficial toward taking the network forward. The other thing I did tell you about, and I mentioned it again at the top of this program, is our affiliation with Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. I cannot emphasize enough to you how important this is, both to the horn and to Coal River Mountain Watch, because, and I'm gonna share some stuff with you here in a minute. You've heard me say before, and it is true, that while there are people in this state who are working day in and day out and really busting their rear ends trying to save the Appalachian Mountains from the extraction industry, we can't do it by ourselves. We know for a fact that we will get no help through our political leadership, not through a governor, not through a congressman, any number of congresspeople, not through senators, and not certainly through the current president of the United States, who is not a part of the solution, but in fact a great part of the problem. With that in mind, we know that we have to have outside help. We have to have help from people outside Appalachia. And that's where you come in. And I want to share some stuff with you here. And sort of let you know, because you know what? Hey, did you know they're having the New Hampshire primary today? Did you know that they opened the polls at Dixville Notch, New Hampshire at 12 midnight or some such insanity? Did you know that? And did you know that at the end of the night, somebody's going to win the Republican primary in New Hampshire and somebody's going to win the Democratic primary in New Hampshire, and it's probably going to be the John drop bombs on peasants from 40,000 feet McCain and on the Republican side, and it's going to be Barack Obama on the Democratic side? Did you know that? Okay, I'm assuming that you know that. I somehow doubt that there's really just a hell of a lot to talk about that, although we certainly can and certainly will if that's what you want to do. We can also talk about the fifth race at Hialeah, because that's what American politics is reduced to at this point, and that is a horse race. I really, really wanted to be on the air last night, because the whole Hillary has cried story broke, and it broke, and I wanted to break some windows. I mean, from the looks of right-wing websites, you would have thought that she was going all Jimmy Swaggart, you know, with the tears rolling down her face. I have sinned against you. I never saw a tear. But right-wing America is now convinced that Hillary Clinton sat down in New Hampshire and bawled like Dorothy wanting to get back to Kansas. And I hate that crap. Honest to Pete, I do. And that's what puts me, I don't know about you, but that's what puts me off the process. So if you guys want to talk about New Hampshire tonight, we can talk about New Hampshire tonight. Hell, we can talk about Super Tuesday. We can talk about the Florida primary. We can talk about California. We can talk about New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, if that's what you want to do, because, as you know, that's what this program and that's what this network is about. It is about fostering dialogue and conversation and cussing and discussing, as I like to say. We can talk about that. And we can probably talk about it with more intelligence than Chris Matthews, Pat Buchanan, Joe Scarborough, Bill O'Reilly, and every other talking head freak on television combined. So, you know, I'm not trying to indicate some sort of overall disdain to talking politics. It's a political show, for heaven's sakes. But I'm all New Hampshire'd out. I'm all Iowa'd out. I'm largely all primaried out. Because the fact of the matter is, something inside me says that this is, as our good friend David from Tennessee says, all wrestling. As it stands now, we'll get some sort of corporatist for a Republican nominee. Although if it's Brother Mike, Reverend Mike Hoeksterby, he'll be more theocrat than corporatist. And on the Democratic side, we're going to get somebody who, to varying degrees, will or will not end the damn Iraqupation yesterday. The question is, how, you know, what the meaning of yesterday is. Does yesterday mean 4 or 5 years from now, 2 years from now, 10 months from now? I have preferences. I prefer John Edwards to Senator Clinton or Senator Obama for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is I don't believe in senators being president. I know that may seem rather silly in a broad stroke, but that's just because I'm sort of a constitutional purist. And a political purist, too, for that matter. But we know what we're going to get, and frankly, because they have beaten us over the head with a political campaign that started a year and a half before the first vote was cast, I'm a little tired of it. Aren't you? Or do you, like, get off on this stuff? I mean, we'll find stuff along the way to talk about, but honest to Pete, I'm tired of it. And so I want to take a few minutes at the front end of the program to share with you a little bit of the idea of why I keep saying that it's so important that folks outside West Virginia get actively involved with Coal River Mountain Watch. I want you to know what we're up against. Now, I have some audio here, and I'm going to play it for you. The coal industry has, of course, millions of dollars to fund its pro-death, pro-devastation campaign, pro-mountaintop removal, pro-torment-the-earth policies in West Virginia. Their pockets are so deep that the bottom has not yet been found. So they can wage not only physical war on the people of West Virginia, they can wage an information war. And they do it on a routine basis. I'm going to play for you the audio from a series of TV ads that have been run by an organization called Walker Machinery. Walker Machinery is the biggest prostitute to the mountaintop removal industry in this state. They sell new and used Caterpillar equipment that is used every day to destroy acres upon acres upon hundreds upon thousands upon tens of thousands of acres of mountaintop in West Virginia, and ruin the lives of people who have been on the land there for, you know, 300 years, okay? And some even longer because they're, you know, they've got Native American blood in them. And these things, just as a for instance, I sat down to watch my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers play some basketball on Sunday. A thrilling victory over number 10 Marquette, in which the Mountaineers looked like they ought to have been ranked number 10 themselves. I'm sorry, I'm a partisan, and yes, many of you hate sports. Please don't turn it off yet. But what I've got here for you, in the middle of that game, and in the middle of any Mountaineer sports broadcast inside West Virginia, we are always beset by these hateful, hateful, destroy more West Virginia with the coal industry ads. I've got a few of them. I'm saving the worst for last, okay? But let's start with a little 30-second number that I think you'll really enjoy.
Most West Virginians never see a coal mine. While the active site provides its community and families with jobs and energy, the Trail of Green, sculpted, reclaimed, and restored, blends and renews the natural feel and original nature of our mountain terrain. It's about balance. Balance between jobs, taxes, quality of life, and the need to protect the environment. It happens every day in West Virginia. We think you ought to know.
You'll notice that the need to protect the environment is last on the list. There's a reason for that. It's not equal, suffice to say. And they want you to know that, you know, this isn't that filthy old coal that you think about that stinks like hell when you burn it and leaves big old clinkers in your furnace. And no, this is special coal.
West Virginia's mountains and ridgetops have provided America with jobs and energy from coal. These beautiful green areas represent the final stage of mining. Our miners have maintained the rugged West Virginia character of their homeland through the almost artistic use of their equipment. West Virginia's citizens and hardworking miners deserve credit and praise for preserving our mountain character. That's a cleaner and greener West Virginia coal.
Yeah, you hear that? They're not really devastation engineers and demolition monsters who are destroying the oldest mountains on planet Earth. No, they're artists, damn it. They're Michelangelos with a D9 caterpillar dozer. That's what they are. They're artists. They use their machines like artists use a chisel or paint or something, and they make it all pretty and green and flat. Because, you know, we're sick of living in the world's oldest mountains, and, you know, we like it flat. We'd like to have it all flat. Just flatten it all, guys. Thanks. Do us a big old favor, would you? Right. So we continue onward.
This gorgeous area outside of Morgantown, once a surface coal mine, exemplifies responsible mining and reclamation practices of the coal industry. The rolling countryside with its baseball and soccer fields will benefit generations of West Virginians and highlights coal's commitment to community and environmental responsibility. The West Virginia Coal Association is proud to report these achievements because coal is a good neighbor.
You hear that? Baseball, softball, soccer fields, frisbees and wheat checks for everybody. Life is good because we're destroying this state. You know, never mind the poisoned wells and the people, you know, urinating blood because of what the coal industry has done to their water supply. But, you know, we're not going to shut. No. See, these are pretty and green and they're lovely and it shows that coal's a good neighbor. See, do you believe that, don't you? See, if coal was really such a good neighbor, we wouldn't be desperately running these stinking, lying little ads trying to prove to you that we are now, would we? Because these are expensive, and they cost us thousands and thousands of dollars to produce and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to run. Yay, us! We're a good neighbor. But we are operating in descending order here. And in that descending order comes a TV commercial that shows a guy sitting sort of in a blackened area in front of a computer monitor, wearing shorts, he's got long hair, looks, you know, vaguely reminiscent of Sammy Hagar, and a Hawaiian shirt. In other words, he's not one of us. He's one of those California environmental wacko weirdo guys. Mm-hmm. But he needs electricity, too.
Dude! Where's my electricity?
Without electricity, your computer is a worthless plastic box.
Ah, bummer, dude.
99% of West Virginia's electricity comes from coal, a low-cost, reliable energy source.
That's him destroying his computer.
We may not ride the waves at Malibu, but surfing the web won't be a problem for West Virginians. If we can keep mining the coal.
Oh, bummer, dude.
See, that's because, like, you know, in California, you know, they've got, like, all this regulation and stuff, you know, and they don't burn any, like, they don't have any, like, coal-fired power plants, you know, so people's electricity just, like, goes out all the time. They don't tell you about that, about California, but, like, people barely have any electricity at all, you know? Yeah, because, you know, they don't love coal like we do here in West Virginia, and they sure wish they had coal and coal-fired power plants like we do, but they've got too many regulations, you know, dude. Really, this is the ham-fisted crap we have to put up with. I bring you now to the pièce de résistance. These are the ads that I had to watch during the Mountaineer basketball game Sunday afternoon. Let's go, Mountaineers. They feature a somewhat dumpy-looking woman in bad clothing holding a microphone as if she is a reporter standing in a courtroom. This is one of those folks that, as a heterosexual guy, I never want to see naked. And she is telling... Well, you'll get the idea. They have excerpted a half of a sentence out of a court ruling and have built their entire straw man on that half a sentence, because what happens is a bug flies in, an animated CGI bug flies in and perches on the judge's bench. All right? And she is querying that bug. I know, I'm talking about video. It's dancing about architecture, but you'll get the idea.
In West Virginia, court actions have stopped surface mine permits. One argument centers around what happens to bugs when valley fills are constructed. Miss Bug, is coal mining a hardship for you?
Heck no! The valley fills make great homes for us bugs.
What about streams?
When the rain falls, the water flows just fine for my family.
So there you have it. That's the bug's eye view of this issue.
Can we talk about car windshields now?
That's right. Mountaintop removal is less dangerous to life than car windshields and the bugs that smack them. You know, there was a wonderful Porsche ad several years ago that showed from the inside of the car looking out the windshield and a splattered bug on the windshield. And it says, Porsche kills bugs fast. So... what you get here is that, we're going to talk, it's only the bugs.
Yes, why, as a matter of fact, us bugs live lovely on all the dead living creatures that get buried when the valley fills are created. Our little maggots grow in the flesh. It's just yummy, I tell you. And when it rains, the water flows. I mean, isn't that the way God intended it when he made the earth 6,000 years ago? That's right. Mm-hmm.
But I've saved the most obnoxious for last because it includes the most hateful piece of fear-mongering I have seen in video form come out of these lying scumbuckets at the West Virginia Coal Association and Walker Machinery. And this is it. Again, that was Ms. Bug, the one with the little southern accent. I don't know why she had to have a southern accent, Why couldn't she sound like she came from, from the Bronx or maybe, Wisconsin? But no, she had a southern accent. More bigotry on the part of the, but you understand. So this is Mr. Bug. Apparently Mr. and Mrs. Bug met somewhere besides Appalachia, because he doesn't have a southern accent. He sounds like a freaking alien.
Coal's opponents use the courts and bug habitats to attack West Virginia's coal economy. So Mr. Bug, how's the water in your woods?
Water's fine. My family moved on the valley fill as soon as we heard about the beautiful reclamation the coal miners built.
Beautiful.
But the court ruling stopped coal mining because you couldn't live there.
Temporary, my dear. We just moved during construction.
So your homes aren't endangered?
Creepers, no. And you know what? I don't need electricity in my home. Do you?
That's right. We're sacrificing electricity for bugs. You do get the message, don't you? That's what these lying sacks of dung that bugs would live on want you to believe.
There can be no electricity without coal. Coal is the only means by which West Virginians can have lights that turn on. That's why you're not allowed to buy green energy in West Virginia. You will buy coal. You will buy coal-fired energy, and you will like it, West Virginian citizen. I don't hear you. Say amen.
I'm gonna run that one for you just one last time.
Coal's opponents use the courts and bug habitat.
Use the courts and bug habitats. See, they don't... Coal's opponents. Coal is an inanimate object. There's nobody opposed to coal. The opposition is to the people who extract the coal. See how the language gets tormented and twisted? They use the courts. They don't go to court because there's a constitutional provision in the Constitution of West Virginia that states clearly and unequivocally that the doors of the courts to the state of West Virginia shall be open to the citizens thereof. No. They're using it. You got that?
Coal's opponents use the courts and bug habitats to attack West Virginia's coal economy. So, Mr. Bug, how's the water in your woods?
Water's fine. My family moved on the valley fill as soon as we heard about the beautiful reclamation the coal miners built.
But the court ruling stopped coal mining because you couldn't live there.
Temporary, my dear. We just moved during construction.
So your homes aren't endangered?
Creepers, no. And you know what? I don't need electricity in my home. Do you?
Are you sick yet? Do you understand now? And I'm not trying to talk down. Please forgive me if that's what it sounds like. I'm not trying to talk down. But do you see now what we're up against? And guess what? It's not just us. It's you. Oh, so you don't have a problem with the water in the valley fills? Creepers, no! Obviously, they never interviewed anybody in Printer, West Virginia. No. Where the kidney failure is. Where the wells are poisoned. Where you literally can't wash your clothes, take a bath, or take a drink. But see, that's the diversion. To make it seem like the environmentalists care more about bugs than they do our economy. No. Because the bugs and the amphibians and the little animals and everything that walks, crawls, or creeps upon the face of the earth is a barometer for what will happen to us. So you are needed at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net. If you ever wondered, please take note of what I've just played for you and understand how grave the need is. Stand with us. Be part of us. Like I said, the membership is next to nothing. And yet, you'll get more bang for your buck in the good that you know you're doing than just about any other organization you could be a part of. Let's go to the phones, see what's going on. Hi, who have I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, well, before I get to the reason I called in, a point of order. Most of California's power is hydropower. They get it from us.
Well, that's what they, you know, they don't have any. Yeah.
So they very carefully bothered to mention about California people with their power. Most of it comes from falling water.
Yeah. Right. Which is not nearly as dangerous or destructive or poisonous as
exactly
coal-fired power.
And it just keeps coming down out of the sky, you know. Just...
Yeah.
My problem is we ship so much of it into California. But right. That's neither here nor there. As far as the coal ads are concerned, I've already contacted my Congress critter, and I'll let you know what happens when I get an answer back.
Well, do please, because you know these, and that's I keep trying to reiterate. Please, when you contact your elected representative, tell them that you're doing so on the behalf of West Virginians who have no representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because our voices can't be heard because the extraction industry yells so loudly with all those little green pieces of paper they keep giving our elected representative.
Yeah. I know. The money talks, and this leads into what the reason I called. Money talks really loud. How does it feel to live in a country where the suits at Disney pick out who gets to be seen by the American public as to whether or not they're going to be running for president?
Oh, yeah. Whether it's, the suits at Disney certainly decided that Dennis Kucinich didn't deserve to be heard. And then the suits at Fake News decided that Ron Paul didn't get to be heard. I don't agree with Ron Paul, but you know what? The people who are going to vote Republican damn sure deserve to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. And, you know, what really ticks me off? The four candidates that were allowed in that debate on the Democratic side all took money from Disney.
Explain, please.
Every one of them took money, a campaign donation, from Disney.
Now, John Edwards says he has not taken a corporate contribution and he doesn't take PAC money.
According to the New York Times article, they all did. The only people who did not were not allowed in that debate.
Well, how interesting is that?
Yeah. There's an open letter to ABC. It's posted on the main page of the blog. People should read it because this sets a really, really bad precedent. I mean, they made no bounds about it. You know, usually before, it's always been in some smoky back room. This, they were downright arrogant about it. And they said, okay, these are the people we're going to allow the American public to see. Welcome to fascism.
Well, you know, welcome to information management. Welcome to the dog and pony show. Welcome to the wrestling match. Welcome to the horse race.
Yeah. That's what this is. It's all wrestling. Because the suits have determined who they were willing to accept. And they said, okay, you can take one of these. Anybody else, you're not going to be allowed to see.
Yeah, disgusting, isn't it?
Ain't it grand?
And, of course, Dennis Kucinich has filed some sort of a lawsuit, which might be heard sometime in 2012.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that someone would accuse him of using the courts, too, just as we here are accused of using the courts because it's about the bugs.
Because that's all you got.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, then, you know, it's just corporatism run amok. That's why I did not want Obama to win, because he's too much of a corporatist. Just look at how much money he's raised. When you start raising that amount of money.
Yeah.
It makes me real suspicious about where it comes from.
Well, look, I mean, I recognize that in the current state of politics, I mean, I'm a little bit of a realist, Susan. Nobody can run for president on $16.32.
Oh, yeah. I never expected Dennis Kucinich to win. What I expected him to be was a conscience for the Democratic Party.
Which he appears to still be.
Yeah. But he's not being able...
He explained. Did you see where he
those points in public?
Did you see where he explained? And his time in the debates is over. This benchmark will be used in a South Carolina debate, Florida debate. Well, you know, you're not polling enough numbers. You don't get.
Ugh.
And yet, you know, there's Richardson cruising along nationally at 2%. But you know, he polled a little bit more in Iowa. So therefore, you see how the drill works.
Yeah.
But this is going to be the paradigm now, and you're right, that honesty is gone. But one thing I did want to make clear, because a lot of people were highly upset with Dennis Kucinich because he swung his support to Obama in the Iowa caucuses, when a lot of us thought, well, if you're going to swing it to anybody, it ought to be John Edwards. But he said very clearly, I read this over at afterdowningstreet.org, he said very clearly that the reason he didn't swing it to John Edwards is because of the amount of money that John Edwards makes from working for a hedge fund. And that hedge funds are part of the problem and not part of the solution.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if that kind of thing does more harm to our potential candidates than good. But, you know, I don't think that real politic consideration is part of the equation for a man like Dennis Kucinich. He is going to follow his moral compass.
Exactly.
Over any political concerns.
And I said, you know, and he said this was a, he made it clear to his people, this was for the Iowa vote Isle of Caucus only.
Right, because that's more or less the only place that it mattered, because it's the only place that that sort of calculus obtains.
But, it's just the idea of, we are getting more and more closer and closer to rollerball.
Yeah, we talked about that a few nights ago. Yeah, Susan, thank you very much.
Yeah, you are more than welcome, and I will let you know what my Congress critter says when he gets back to me.
Do please. Congress critters, senators, doesn't hurt to try to communicate with the likes of Gordon Smith, I guess. It might be a futile act, but you'll never know until you try.
Yeah. Do you by any chance know when Congress comes back into session?
No, I don't. Should be soon.
Good. I will contact you when it comes back into session.
Good job. We appreciate it, Susan.
No problem.
All right.
You
take care.
Next.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's true. Bye now. Let's see if we've got somebody here. No, that's a busy signal. So that's where, that's where we begin tonight. We begin with this issue of the realities of mountaintop removal. We begin with the idea that a mono economy is somehow do you realize that if some other country was doing this, that any right-wing Republican authoritarian administration in the White House would refer to it as a Soviet-style command economy? You do realize that, right? But that's the way these Republicans are. They only, they're great communist foes until they want to use communist tactics. And that's what's going on here. Electricity in West Virginia, you heard the ads, and they're not lying about that part. 99% of all of West Virginia's electricity comes from coal. And as a consequence of that, I'd say that I'm subject to a command economy, wouldn't you? I've got Hobson's... Every West Virginian is faced with Hobson's choice. The horse by the door or no horse at all. Which, of course, in the end, is no choice. Scylla and Charybdis. One of the, when the legislature sits down here fairly soon, and that's one of the things I do love about West Virginia, we make sure that our legislature sits in the most absolute, most hateful part of the year, so that they have to walk around in freezing weather and stuff, and, they don't, but then again, that drives them indoors to the lobbyist booze and shrimp parties. Now, I'm going to make some contacts, and I'm going to, listen, we need to do something about the fact that West Virginians who want to cannot buy green energy. And I hope our good friend John Fox doesn't think I'm walking all over his turf here, talking about things like that. But the fact of the matter is, how many West Virginians, if you could, would opt, would pay an extra $10, $15, $20 a month just to know that you were not personally responsible for the destruction of any mountains in this state? It's worth $20 a month to me. My family, without a doubt. And to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, David, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Been paying attention to the latest. I don't see. There's a bigger issue than what it is, the horse races. I look at the bigger picture of things. And to me, here's an example of the kind of situation we're in. Which candidates did not sign up for the RFID chips? Do you know which three?
No.
Kucinich, Edwards, and Paul.
Well, I figured Kucinich and Paul were part of the process.
Yeah, Edwards surprised me on that one. He really did. Now, as far as what you're not seeing and what you are seeing, I think personally that if we can go in the system of the direction of Hillary Clinton and just basically continue to go down this direction, there's no way our country can sustain anything, even if we do pull out of Iraq. Because we personally just lost all of, hope, perspective, the judgment on the dollar, all of that. And I believe, and I know you don't, I know you joke about it, buy gold and all of that. We're not getting that dollar back, Bob. That's not coming back. That's going to crash, and that's going to crash hard. And you know what's funny about it is people laugh about buying gold and all of that, but it,
no, David, you mistake me.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing about buying gold. I'm laughing about the people hustling those ads.
Oh, I know what you're saying, but the amazing thing to me, and I've been studying Paul for a while now. I've listened to his speeches. He was the only guy on Jay Leno invited and to actually explain what he doesn't like about the Federal Reserve System. And it makes more sense than pretty much any candidate. And he also gave a nod to one of the people he respects the most in the whole race is Kucinich. And I guess they talk back and forth, and I've always been friends on the Hill or whatever. So I found that interesting.
Yeah, it's my understanding that they have been close for pretty much a long time.
I know. I think I believe you have a false reading on Paul when it comes to...
No, I don't, David. I don't have a false reading on him when it comes to his position on social policy. I certainly don't have a false reading on him when it comes to this the states' rights BS that he spouts. The business that he's going to leave it up to individual states to determine what a woman can do with her insides. No, there's no false reading on that at all. He has said it. I mean, he said it plainly.
That's your opinion.
No, it's not my opinion. He has said it.
No, I'm saying that's your opinion of what morality is. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, David, it's not my opinion of morality.
No, you can't be an authoritarian on morality. That's the problem we have. A lot of
But no one's being an authoritarian on morality. If anybody's
yes,
being
yes,
authoritarian...
People are.
No, see, Paul's position on a woman's right to do with her body as she deems her body needs be done with, that's the authoritarian position.
That's where
the hypocrisy of libertarianism creeps in. You know, I'm all for personal freedom, but if it's a woman's personal freedom to do with her body as she deems necessary, then personal freedom goes flying out the window.
Truthfully, they want it by a state-by-state basis.
Right, and that's the current, and that is one of the current schools of thought of the anti-choice movement. Is that they want to take they're sort of giving up on the Supreme Court for a little bit, and in order to keep the issue alive for their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful, they're taking a state-by-state fight. That's why there's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution on the upcoming ballot that defines a fetus, or defines a human being as the union of one egg and one sperm.
To me, Bob, I think we should have that battle if that's what the people want. You can't just say an overhang. Everything is like this.
Okay, under that same rubric, David.
Yes.
We would leave it up to the states to determine whether an African American is 3/5 of a human being. There's not a dime's worth of difference between the two. If states' rights is if it's all about states' rights to make those kind of determinations, then states have the right to make that determination too.
Well, Bob, we would hope that most of the states would be good in their judgment. The direction we're headed in, Bob, and I don't care if you don't think so or not. The direction we're headed in. If you want universal health care and you want all of that, realize there's going to be a bigger price to pay for it. And it's not what you think it is. It's always going to be a cash. There's always going to be a bottom line. And if you keep pushing on this on the people, it's going to blow back in your face. It's going to blow back in everyone's face. And that's what's happening right now with all the young kids.
Why isn't universal health care blowing back in the Swedes' face? Or the Norwegians?
That?
Or the Finns?
Why isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they don't have the population we do. And, Bob, here's a question. Where are we going to get the money for that? And, oh, by the way, all of that money.
Where are we going to get the money? Go read Kucinich. His numbers don't lie. We're already paying enough in privately insuring a percentage of Americans as it would take to do universal health care for all.
Bob, the dollar's going to be worth what then? Bob, it's almost like a design plan for all of this. Don't you see it? For all of it just to collapse. You have to see it now.
Look, David, it's not hard for me to look back and see. I was thinking about this just this very day. It's not hard for me to look at history and see it repeating itself here, because we have allowed elected representatives who are too damn stupid and foolish to look at history to have it repeat on us. I mean, I don't think this is the point in the program for me to go over the entire collapse of the Athenian city-state, but you know, there's a lot to be learned there. You know, you wage wars of choice that bankrupt you. Once you're good and bankrupt, then the real crap storm begins.
Right, and the reason why you're not getting universal health care is going to be partly that.
But to their credit, I think it was Bill Richardson in the Democratic debate on Saturday evening who pointed out that until the Iraq war ends, and I think Paul may have done the same thing on the Republican side. Until the Iraq war ends, anything that you want, anything that we want, is not accomplishable, because the Iraqupation is costing us our every last cent.
Bob, what I'm saying is when they say when it's going to be the same thing, and you're going to see it, I'm going to tell you I told you so. When we get all the Democrats in office and everything is lovely, hunky-dory, or whatever, universal health care is going to be blown under the table.
Well, there's nobody talking universal health care. There's not a Democrat who's talking universal health care.
I know, but what I'm saying is we're never going to get that program. And it's going to be because of the Democrats and the Republicans. But what I'm telling you is it's just a frigging carrot. It's always going to be that carrot. And they're always going to hold it under us. You know why, Bob? Because we're headed toward serfdom. All of those leaders that we continue to elect, and I don't care if they label themselves progressives or not, if we continue to follow under that system of the population we currently have now, the dollar rate that we have now, it's the most screwiest idea I've ever heard. They're not going to give us anything. And that is why we have to go in an opposite direction.
Well,
Bob, I'm telling you.
Okay, we have to go in an opposite direction, David. Are you honestly trying to tell me that Ron Paul is the opposite direction?
No. I'm not saying Ron Paul is the opposite direction for you. I'm saying you are going to have to look at your options really hard right now and look and see that everything is crashing around you, and realize that it's not the Democrats, it's not whatever it is, it's the system that we live in right now. We can continue to blame Republicans.
David, my friend, you're preaching to the choir.
I know, Bob, we can continue to blame Republicans and whatever. But again, that's just the giant psyops, people.
Okay, fine. But the reality is, and I'm sorry to drag reality into this process, is that there isn't going to be an anarcho-syndicalist candidate for president on the ballot with a meaningful chance at victory. There's going to be a Republican, and there's going to be a Democrat. Now, if you want to convene a constitutional convention, I'll go to Philadelphia with you. Okay, but barring significant change to the political process in this country, you get, some people say the lesser of two evils is still evil. Yeah, I understand that. I've seen it on the bumper sticker before. But the fact of the matter is, you have to make a determination in November as to which is worse. Not who is better, who is worse. Now, we've had go back to 1980, we've had 20, we've had 20 years of Republicans and 8 of a Democrat. Now, whose economy was in better shape, the Democrat or the Republicans? The Democrats was. Now, granted, we pooped in our own nest with NAFTA, and I will never argue with anybody over that. It was nasty, and it was an act of unmitigated stupidity. And it hasn't turned out to be the way it was supposed to, the way that it was sold. But I think the people who were selling it in the beginning understood that it wasn't. NAFTA is a money-making tool. It would do well for every American to have, carved on his or tattooed on his or her forehead so that they can see it every time they look in the mirror. You know, get it done backwards, the way they do ambulance backwards on the front of the ambulance so you can see it in your rearview mirror. Those words of Calvin Coolidge, the business of America is business. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that, David, but the fact is, that is what drives this country. We do nothing out of altruism. The food stamp program does not exist because of a concern about food resources for the poor. It is pure and simply corporate welfare for grocery store chains and food producers. Okay?
I agree with that.
And that's not me criticizing the program. It's right for the wrong reasons. This country does not do anything politically. Our military-industrial complex is not about defending the United States of America from outside threats. It is about propping up a military-industrial complex that Dwight D. Eisenhower, on the eve of his exodus from the White House, warned us about, and we didn't have the common good sense that God gave a stomped gosling to take him at his word. The business of America is business. And so nothing will be done politically that is not done to foster the advantages of the business community, whether it be, and that is commonly translated now as corporate America. Everybody has that hook in their jaw to some degree or another. I don't care if it's Barack Obama or John Edwards or Hillary Clinton or any of the little freaks running for the Republican nomination, and to a certain extent, it grieves me to say it, but somewhere along the way, somebody can whisper in Dennis Kucinich's ear and get him to pay attention, and they're from the business community. And God knows that applies to Ron Paul. Ron Paul can roast in hell for all I care just because the little sleazy bastard crossed the picket line at NBC and ABC. In my book, you cross a picket line, there's nothing left to recommend your humanity. So, there is a value judgment here, but as Bart Kopp often says, you don't want to do better, you want a pony. And I'm not pointing at you, David. But you know what? There's going to be Democrat, Republican, and there's not going to be a chunk of part on the ballot that says, I want a pony.
Again, Bob, it's the start of something else.
Well, I'm all for starting it, but it's not going to start between now and November.
No one said that, but when you have to start sometime. That's what I'm telling you.
And I implore people to start. You know what? There is not a single human being within the sound of my voice right now, and yours, David,
right,
that would not do a better job on their county commission, their city council, their mayor's office, than the person who is occupying it right now. And I mean from New York City to San Francisco to Los Angeles to Busted Knuckle. I mean any political office in this country. There is not a single person listening to this program who would not do a better job than their current elected representative. I am proud to say I could be a better governor, better congress critter, better senator than anybody in office now. Because, frankly, I give more of a damn.
Well, there's always the exception to the rule, Bob.
Yeah, there may be a few, sure. I wouldn't have said that about Paul Wellstone. I don't think I'd be a better congressman than Dennis Kucinich. Sure, there are exceptions, but the broad margin of our political landscape now is filled with flunkies and corporate do boys, and nothing in the way of someone who goes to work every day thinking about the people who are in their cars driving to their work every day. It just isn't there. So, you know, I'm not the guy that needs to be warned that we need change in this country, and that's part of the reason that I heard the word change so many times, and this is actually a part of the program I'd planned for tonight. I heard the word change so many times during the Democratic debate Saturday night that I just actively wanted to vomit. Because you know what? That phrase, you know, the theme of this year's presidential election is change. You know, it's like the old words from Unity. You might be a little too young for that, but you know, The word from you for tonight's word from Unity is change. But the fact of the matter is, it's like the senior class that can't come up with a good prom theme, so they just throw out change. And so, you know, you say, oh, I'll bring change. You know what? Volcanoes bring change. Earthquakes bring change. Planes flying into buildings bring change. Droughts bring change. Floods bring change. Change ain't always good. And so to sort of say it with that facile, I'm going to bring change. I think sells the American electorate short, but I was reminded the other night when I asked who said it, H.L. Mencken said, no one has ever gone broke underestimating the American people.
Oh, I'm going to go vote for Obama because he's bringing change. I'm voting for Hillary. She says she's going to be an agent of change.
Oh, I'm voting for John Edwards. He says he's going to bring change. And there's all the Republican freaks going, we can change too!
Which is partly...
And it's a con!
Which is partly, again, part of the reason why we shouldn't continue to just sign up for program after program.
Well, it depends on the program. I mean, no, let me back up. You know what? Left to my own devices, I would make people eligible for Social Security retirement at 55.
Mm-hmm.
Not 70 or 90 or whatever it's going to be by the time I get to it. So that after busting their ass for an entire lifetime, if they want to knock off at 55, they can, and they can be comfortable. And they'll have health care, and, you know, this is all, you know, if I wake up in the alternate universe and I'm maximum dictator tomorrow. Mm. We're going the wrong direction. We ought to be trying to make things easier, not harder. But where the vast middle of America is concerned, we are far more concerned with making it harder than we are with making it easier. Some of the answers are simple. Ensure everybody. Expand Medicare. You know what Kucinich keeps talking about, H.R. 676, that he signed on to and John Conyers offered into the House, the Medicare for All Act. Medicare is the single most efficient health care delivery system that America has ever had or ever will have. Expand that efficient system for every single American. Now, if some idiot wants to go out and buy Cigna, let him. But you know what? Make reasonable, rational, preventive, wellness-oriented health care available for every American, and you will see the rest of America change behind it. Reform the political campaign contribution structure. Change will come, and some of those smart people that aren't running for office now will.
But see, with the program thing, Bob, it's viral. It will be constant program after program after program. You have to be attached to this program, attached to that, attached to this program. And that's the problem that we have if we just keep signing up for whatever. And I don't.
But what? Okay. What pro? Let's be concrete here, David. What programs do you want to get rid of?
What programs do I want to get rid of? I don't want people signing up for any more programs. There's always going to be catches.
Well, I know, but we have programs now. We have Social Security.
Okay.
I think
people should keep their Social Security there.
Okay, so we're going to keep that program.
Yeah.
What about the nutrition program for women and infant children, WIC? Is that beneficial to make sure that little babies get proper nutrition?
If that's necessary, that's necessary.
Well, I mean, it's proven fairly
but
successful.
But what I'm saying, what is the bottom line there? Are they really getting the money? That's what I'm saying. I mean, I
don't know. I go to the grocery store and I see a mommy with a little baby in an infant carrier, and she whips out the little WIC booklet and they let her leave with the food.
But do you see why a lot of the conscience libertarians with a conscience and a lot of people who just don't think of being part of the greater good? When they constantly tell them, and Bob, there is this fact, it's a plague. When they constantly tell them and they don't agree with something, well, you're a cold, heartless bastard. No, because they believe that something else is going to be attached to that. They're cynical.
Oh, listen, nobody hates public education more than a libertarian does. They loathe it.
Bob, that's their natural right. It's in the, they can do that.
Well, did I say they can't?
I know, but what I'm saying is,
but nobody,
demonize someone over just thinking something is crazy.
No, I'm not demonizing anybody.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm saying the entirety of America. This is the way it works when you criticize something or a system. It seems to be they're always point the finger and go, we should always have open dialogue. And you do it too, Bob. You say Republicans.
Yeah.
You constantly say Republicans.
Yeah, because most of them are.
See what you just did, Bob?
Yeah, I haven't met any lately that I wanted to sit down and have tea and crumpets with.
Bob, it's designed that way. Don't you get it?
They're not.
You say most of them. Them.
Them.
Them.
Yes. David, what am I supposed to do? List them by name?
No.
I mean, that's like the old joke of the white guy and the black guy who go to vote in 1950s Alabama, and the clerk looks at the looks at the white guy and says, "Okay, here's your voting test. What's the largest city in America?" And the guy goes, "New York City." And the black guy walks up and the voting clerk looks at him and says, "Name them."
You must feel in this country you're designed to go after far. You're like we're potentially lab rats. You're designed to go after far. You're saying that's a pig. That guy and whatever it is that they think that evil. That's what constantly people in this country want to do.
Well, am I supposed to? I mean, granted, the last year with the Democratic Congress has been a real non-starter for me because they've been non-starters. On the other hand, however, am I supposed to look at what happened to America while the Republicans had control of the Congress and say, well, you know, that was just an accident that they behaved like total dicks for 12 years?
Well, Bob, on the other side of the thing, a lot of the people, that's how they feel about the Democrats.
See, you're talking about feelings. I'm talking about empirical stuff you can point to. The Bush administration guy who gets in front of Congress, sticks his hand in the air, swears to tell the truth, and underestimates the cost of the Medicare plan, Part D prescription drug benefit by $200 billion.
Bob, but at the same time, if a Democrat does something bad, do we some Democrats? I mean, come on.
No, it's Democrats, if you want to get down to it.
Oh, Democrats. Okay, but I don't hear that. That's what I'm saying, Bob. It's this constant...
Well, that's because you're not putting your hazmat suit on and wandering around in places like Free Republic.
No, listen. When I listen on liberal talk radio or progressive talk radio or any kind of thing or a program or an op-ed, I don't hear... Democrats, if they make the same mistake. What I'm saying is, it's a constant chase the tail. R versus D, D versus
Okay, well, here, let me do one for you, David, so that you can say that you've heard it.
Okay.
The Democratic-controlled Congress has decided or attempted to hold hearings regarding steroid use in baseball, just like the Republican majority did. What a bunch of horses' asses the Democratic majority are for doing such a thing. I don't know if it's because you don't always catch the program, but I've blistered the hell out of this Democratic Congress for a year now. I've done my very best to call down thunder and damnation and plagues of frogs and locusts on Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi for their betrayal of the American people. And I promised that I would. And it meant something to me. I can't think of the number of times that I've been behind this microphone and said, when the Democrats take control of the Congress, I'm going to be twice as hard on them as I ever was on the Republicans. Because I expect snakes to behave like snakes. But when something else comes in and I see them acting like snakes too, then that makes me all the more angry.
You really think there's a more, I don't know what you say, a more morally balanced party? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm saying that the Democratic Party holds itself out to believe in ideals that are more in line with mine. And when I catch them deviating from it, I don't expect the Republican Party to act in line with my ideals, because they aren't. That would be expecting a tiger to change its stripes or a leopard its spots. But the Democratic Party holds itself out as adhering to ideals, you know, especially if you want to talk about FDR-style stuff and Kennedy-esque stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They hold themselves out as having a commonality of interest with me, and when they deviate from that, yeah, I'm calling BS, and I'm calling it loud and clear. So, you know, this has been a fun one, David. I've got every blessed line lit up right now. So I think you've put a sharp stick in the hornet's nest.
No problem, Bob. But one thing I wanted to say was that what you're seeing now, you're saying it won't happen now. But Bob, right now, what we're doing right now, and what everyone's doing right now, this is the start of the third party. Believe it, people.
Well, that's cool. But please understand, David.
What was the next one? I don't know.
Well, please understand that when a third party ascends, it will be the second party.
Mm.
Okay? It's not going to. It's a third party will not create a three party system. No matter how strong it becomes, and we have historical evidence to base that on. Okay, when the Whigs fell and the Republicans rose, the Whigs disappeared. And it became Democrat and Republican. When you've got the same sort of thing. At one point in time, Eugene V. Debs was the largest vote getter in the history of the American Republic as a third where third parties were concerned. He ran as a socialist. Okay, they faded away. Now, whether it's the Greens or the Naderites or the Paulistas or the Libertarians or, you know, the Little Green Men from Mars Party, whatever party becomes a viable third party will actually eclipse the second and become the second. Because there is no constitutional provision, David, for third parties. When the Constitution was originally conceived, the guy who ran when people ran for president, whoever came in first got to be president, and whoever came in second got to be vice president. That proved to be very, very unwieldy and wound up in gunplay, as we saw with Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. So that was that was promptly remedied.
So what you're saying is basically someone die.
Pardon? Someone
has to die on the battlefield. One army has to die.
Well, no, or you amend the Constitution to allow for third parties, fourth parties, fifth, sixth, and seventh parties, and you go to a parliamentary system such as is in place in Germany, most of Europe, the Japan, Australia, where third parties have a place in the political process and a seat at the table. But the system that is in place via the Constitution now does not, will not allow for the rise of a third party, or to put it better, as I said a minute ago, when the third party rises, the second party falls.
I got you.
And you know that's not me trying to poo-poo on anybody's dreams. That's just the reality as it exists under the Constitution. Could you amend it? Sure. And the Constitution lays out a very plain, although tedious and tortured, process for amending the Constitution. It can be done, but you will have to see such a level of disaffection among both Republicans and Democrats, and that they will hold hands for a little while and sing Kumbaya together.
Mm-hmm.
While they amend the Constitution. Now, you know, I personally come to the, you know, I don't believe that everything's going to fall apart and America is just going to disappear overnight. But I think right now, and maybe, you know, God knows I'm not the first generation to say it, but I have a feeling that we've got a ringside seat for the apocalypse. Not some sort of religious apocalypse where Jesus is going to come down out of the clouds in his holy rolls, but where we are going to see a profound and dramatic paradigm shift in this country. Maybe the natural order of things is that we will eventually balkanize ourselves, such as would have happened had the South prevailed in the Civil War. That is certainly the direction that Ron Paul and his libertarian Paulistas would take, in which individual states make all the basic decisions. You see, the thing that the libertarians will never tell you, David, is that we've already tried what they like.
Yeah.
It was called the Articles of Confederacy, and it failed miserably. But in going the states' rights model, where they are headed is the Balkanization of the United States. You know, look, I mean, let's face facts. California, Oregon, and Washington could band together, secede from the Union, and exist very nicely as their own little country.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe Alabama and Tennessee could do the same thing. The Northeast, you know, New England down to New York and Pennsylvania could. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, you know, on and on and on, you know. You get my idea. And that may be the natural devolution where we head. I don't think we'll see it in my or your or our grandchildren's lifetime, but that may be where it goes.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I could suggest, since Bill Moyers had him on, is the guy who is the in charge of the Reason magazine. And I would like to see you ask those questions that you just told me right now, and I would like to see his reaction, what he says about this stuff.
Okay. Shoot me his name. I don't have it right offhand. Okay. David, this has been a blast.
All right, Bob.
It's talking to you. It's a great way to start the week. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, all right.
Bye now.
Later.
Well, I think the table has been set. Let's see if we've got anybody here. I've got a bunch of... Nah, you're not. How about you? Yeah, you look like a person. Hi, who have I got?
Woo!
Hello? Okie dokie. I think somebody took that person off their medication. Nope. Everybody gave up. So, you know, listen. Yeah, this is conversation radio. I love it. Folks will stay on hold for Malloy for 3 hours. But that's not... Yeah. Huh. If you want to get involved in this discussion, please feel free. Because what? And do you realize that that person stayed online for like 20 minutes to go woo, dude? What you're smoking? Send me some. But at any rate. Well, where do we want to go from here? I'd love to go to the news, but we can't because bless their hearts, the harsh weather that hit out in California apparently just slammed the daylights out of our friends over at QNN, who say that they will be down for something on the order of weeks. So it's hard to say. I hope they come back soon. All right, maybe somebody's trying again. Hi, who have I got?
Woo, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Cough back.
Yeah, what's up, man?
Not much. Yourself?
Well, you know, that was an interesting conversation, and it wasn't necessarily one that I was prepared to go to this evening, but it's enlivening.
Well, in a way, in some ways, I can agree with parts of the libertarian agenda, but it breaks down when you try and apply it across the board. I mean, if you privatize everything, what? You pay a toll as soon as you drive out of your driveway, and when you get to the next corner, you pay another toll, and you pay another toll. You know, it doesn't work. You cannot privatize everything.
No, you can't. And you know, this is not to say that I'm sure you've taken them too, Koss. The political quizzes where you find out where you sit on a sort of XY axis political continuum.
Yeah.
And I wound up being a, you know, hardcore uber liberal civil libertarian.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I genuinely believe that if a woman wants to terminate a pregnancy, she has a right to. If I want to go down to the tattoo parlor and get a tattoo, I've got a right to, as long as I'm not hurting anybody. You know, frankly, psychoactive substances and booze and gambling and all that stuff, you know, let people do it. Let people do it legally and do some good for the, you know, do some general good for the public welfare, you know, that little constitutional phrase that nobody wants to talk about.
Exactly.
So, you know, but it's, The whole privatization scam, is that's exactly what it is. It is a scam, and I know you know history. Am I wrong about the Articles of Confederacy? Wasn't that libertarian wonderland?
Sort of yes and no. It was. Everybody makes up their own rules on their own with no coordination. It had to fall apart. You can't have, at the time, you had 13 entities, but can you imagine 50 different states with 50 different, completely different laws and regulations? You can't have commerce that way.
No. There are some places where you have to have a uniform standard. Oddly enough, and you probably know this as well or better than I do, one of the first places that the United States first saw this come to life was in driver's licenses. And there are actual early court cases from like the 19-aught-whatevers and 1890s trying to decide about somebody who lived in New York who wanted to drive his car in Massachusetts. And you know, it was ultimately resolved on the full faith and credit clause.
Exactly.
Ultimately, I think you'll probably see, and this will be in our lifetimes most likely, you'll see marriage for all defined on the same terms.
As it should be. I mean, you know, I'm not much of a marriage type person. Even when I was a teenager, I thought it was kind of ludicrous because you never know, you know. All these wonderful vows that you make, you know, people don't remain the same throughout their lives. They change.
Yeah.
And sometimes they change in full ways. You know, I'd much rather see a contractual arrangement where you hammer out all these wonderful things like child support and who gets the kids, and who gets the house, and so forth and so on before you get married, so you don't go trying to rip each other's throats out when it ends, badly.
Yeah. We're going to have a 5-year contract, and we'll be up for renewal at 4 years and 6 months.
Correct. And you can make it self-renewing.
Sure.
I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know.
But there's, I mean, I understand what David was saying, and I understand what the libertarians say they want, but I don't know if they understand what they want.
Not really. I mean, we need actually less government micromanagement of individual human lives. I agree with that. You know.
Yeah, because it's none of the government's business if a couple of guys want to pick out a China pattern together.
Right.
It's also none of the government's business. If a woman misses her period and says, I think I'll take a pill. I'm not ready to be pregnant right now.
Correct.
It's none of the government's business. Again, if I choose to get my septum pierced. These are all issues. Oddly enough, for all the business about how the right wingers like to talk about Democrats want to create the nanny state, every issue that I've just mentioned comes from the hard right wing, not from Democrats.
Exactly. Oh, we want freedom to spread our religion, but heaven help you if you be a Muslim in our neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Universal health care seems like a no-brainer. And the only reason it's not a no-brainer in this country is because we have gone for so long with so many people getting sick and being unable to do anything about it, that sickness has become the default position.
Correct. And, you know, contrary to, I mean, the reason that virtually every European country has universal health care was they were having some very serious problems with their labor force, with the people. They were threatening to bring the government down if something wasn't done. And unfortunately, we Americans seem to have forgotten our revolutionary roots. We've forgotten, like, I forget who said this, but it's a very good point, that in France, they were going around in France, that the problem is, in France, the government worries what the people will do. In America, the people worry what the government will do.
Well, that's very true. I admire the fact that the French can bring their entire nation to the French workers can bring their entire nation to a stop, because if the bus drivers go on strike, then the cafeteria workers go on strike, and then the judges, teachers, and lawyers go on strike.
Yeah, they can actually have a general strike in France, and nobody works.
But you're also right in pointing out that a lot of this stuff is not a function of altruism. I don't know how many Americans know, probably not many, that the first social welfare state, or the first underpinnings of one, were created by, what was it, von Hindenburg? Who created workers' compensation, not because of any love of the workers, but because he was, mortally afraid of seeing Germany's industrial base go up in flames.
Yeah, it was Bismarck.
Oh, it was Bismarck. Okay, sorry. My bad. Yeah, Bismarck. Well, they all run together for me.
I know. But
I'm a jerk, by the way.
And getting, keep on forgetting that we're paying more right now for the way things are for our healthcare system than any of these, quote, socialized medicine countries.
Precisely.
We could have universal healthcare. You just stop paying the bloody insurance company and put that money into universal healthcare.
And, you would think that, what I was saying about the business of America is business, you'd think that that might have a ring of truth for the business community, Cossack, because would the people of Elk Snort, Indiana, not like to have had the Toyota plant that went to Canada instead because Canada has universal health care?
Exactly.
Wouldn't Busted Knuckle, Missouri, like to have had that plant? Those jobs?
And we forget that, all these corporations keep on saying, it's our money, it's our money. Wait a minute, whoa. It's our taxes that pay for your roads that you transport your stuff on. It's our taxes that pay for educating your workforce. It's our taxes that pay for the courts to resolve your commercial disputes. Don't you think you owe something? Don't you think?
And it's our taxes that pay for the military that supports your property holdings.
Correct.
Because the military doesn't exist out of some sort of patriotic notion. The military exists, at least in theory, on paper, to protect the property interests of the American people.
Well, it's there to protect the interests of the American ruling class.
Okay, well, yeah, you didn't want to say that. Yeah, sure. Well, it's like I mentioned briefly just in the previous phone call. You ask a libertarian about public education, and they'll say, "You ever hear that stupid fool Neil Bortz?"
Ugh.
Okay, I'll take that for a yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever he refers to public education, he makes it sound like this is the Soviet Union, because he said kids educated in government schools. To put some sort of a negative spin on it, and yet at the same time he hates that ignorant characterizes as the ignorant welfare queen in line at the grocery store buying food on food stamps. Let them starve. Well, you know what? You know, that's the thing with these libertarians. They're a wad of contradictions. Because if you have an appropriate educational system and you give meaningful education to people, they won't make the stupid choices that so frequently wind them up in bad situations. Agnes, for instance, today, Cossack, you might enjoy the story. Agnes got called to grand jury duty. So, we got up in the morning, we drove over to the county seat. She had a letter in hand, because she really can't sit or stand for any extended period of time right now, saying, please don't make this woman be on the jury. Well, in the course of time it took for her to get excused, I got to sit around and watch the parade of people who come to magistrate court, which is our court of, small claims, misdemeanors, that kind of thing.
Right.
And, I'll talk to a stump just to have somebody to talk to. That's part of why this network exists. So I'm outside smoking with these folks and just listening. And I sit down, and I'm smoking a cigarette, talking to a guy, and he's telling me, you know, well, you know, I'm having to miss work today. I'm a plasterer, and I'm making $38 an hour on a federal job right now, and it really hurts to miss a day's work, and this is a quote, this is not my take, but my old lady got pinched for shoplifting, so here my ass sits. And then I just sort of sit there while they proceed to talk about things, and he sends her off to get on the cell phone to go and get on the phone with her best friend so that they can line their stories up, thereby committing another misdemeanor, witness intimidation.
Right.
And you're sitting here and you're thinking, you know what? A little education goes a long way. And, you know, meanwhile, there's another lady over on the bench saying, well, I need some more of my pain medication today. So I know what she's there for. And, you know, kind of got the meth teeth and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And yet, you know, the things that would potentially lift some of these people out of these problems, the libertarians hate. But they also hate doing anything for them.
Well, you know, it's one concept to say, you know, I mean, just right off the bat, I am very high on personal responsibility. I certainly am, you know. I think that if you're fool enough to down a bottle of Jack Daniels and get behind the wheel of a car,
you kind of earn what's coming to you.
Yeah. You know, you deserve what you get. And all these yahoos keep on, it's the drugs that made me do it. No, idiot, you made you do it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it just doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
You're the idiot.
Don't go to Walmart and try to stick Sudafed in your girlfriend's purse.
Exactly. But by the same token, government also has a responsibility. It's citizens, you know. If you educate people, if we had, again, like in Europe, if you had free education all the way through university, you know, all you need is the brain power to do it, you can go. Yeah, I think people might be in better straits in this country.
Yeah,
I
do.
A lot of very smart people have never been able to go to college because they didn't have the buck.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the right wing is so fond of looking at the abortion issue and saying, you know, those aborted babies might have cured cancer. Well, you know what? Those people that can't get an education might have cured cancer, too.
Exactly.
But we don't seem to be all up in a lather about them, and they're actually alive.
And we don't even want to consider the fact that, you know, some of those aborted babies, especially in some of the familial situations that they come from, could very well end up being the next Hitler, the next mass serial murderer. You know, sometimes it's actually a good idea. You do want to cull the herd on occasion. You know.
Yeah.
Especially if mommy's been strung out on meth her entire pregnancy, or been living in a bottle, you know, do you really want what's going to come out? You know, fetal alcohol syndrome is far worse in terms of the fetus than even crack. I mean, fetal alcohol syndrome is devastating.
Yeah, and well, To be honest, you don't even have to go the chemical route, Cossack. There's terminal stupidity syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
The ignorant breed the ignorant.
Correct.
Because, and I remember, oh gosh, it was before 2004, because it was something we were talking about during the Kerry versus Bush thing. I remember when Bush eliminated the budget for the adult literacy program. And this is the guy whose wife is all into literacy. And he says, you know, it's more government pork. Teaching adults to read is pork. And it was actually, you know, it was actually a grant that went into the school systems so that you could, as unobtrusively as possible, engage the parents of the children in literacy so that the children could then become literate in their own right, so that they would have some meaningful support system for their education when they got home.
Exactly. I mean, it's hard for me to get my head around what I've seen in so many homes in our country where you go in a person's house, there's no reading material. There's the TV guide. That's the only reading material around. And I'm stunkered by that. I mean, when I was a kid, Bob, we were poor. I mean, poor. My parents were immigrants. They had nothing. But you know what they did with what little they had?
Books.
Went out and bought books.
Yeah.
Here.
Oh,
for you to read.
I've always grown up in similar surroundings. I'd say, Cossack, because there were always just mounds and mounds of books around me. Bless her heart, my oldest sister. They've got like a 4-bedroom house, and they have no kids, and 3 of the bedrooms are just lined with bookshelves.
Exactly.
And
I mean, that was the thing, you know, amongst me and my brothers, it was always, you know, we were always pushing each other, you know, hey, read this, hey, can I read that? And we were such idiots, we sat there and read the entire Encyclopedia Americana.
Yeah, see, we had the World Book Encyclopedia, and I started at A and didn't quit till Z, and bless her heart, my grandmother always sprung for the yearbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Christmas when that thing came in, because you couldn't tear me away from it.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, to me, that is normal. And that's one of the reasons I don't understand how people can grow up without reading, without having reading material, all kinds of reading material. You know.
So.
And.
I mean, these are soluble problems.
Yep.
They're not insurmountable, but we've got to want them, and we've got to want to pay for them.
Well, that, and we also need to change the culture of it. I mean, you know, we as Americans are tremendously anti-intellectual, which is not good for us as a country. It really is.
Yeah, it was mentioned on the debate. I think it was actually Senator Clinton who mentioned it on the debate Saturday night. She said, unfortunately, 8 years ago, the American people decided that they wanted a guy that they could sit down and drink a beer with to be president. That hasn't worked out so well.
Correct.
And, you know, that's without going into the whole Florida debacle, and I don't think he was elected in the first place. But you know.
Right. I mean, first of all, I'm not sure I'd really want to sit down with this guy and have a beer. Something tells me he'd be in.
Yeah, he's a mean drunk.
Exactly.
Get you arrested. You know, he's the one that, you know, he's the kind of guy that goes in and robs the Eckerds while you're dumber than a box of rocks sitting out there, you know, sleeping it off and jumping, let's go. And the next thing you know, you've been busted for, you know, busted for the robbery along with him. No, I was just passed out in the car.
Or, you know, he'll be the idiot sitting next to you in the bar talking to you, and then, oh, you know, half a bottle down, he looks at you and says, I don't like your face.
Yeah.
Take a swing at you. When the cops come in, he takes a swing at the cops, too. And you both get arrested.
I hate to say it, but I know that guy. I would suggest that any of us who have ever spent any time at all inside a public establishment for the conveyance of or purveyance of alcoholic beverages know that guy. You start out at the beginning of the year, I love you, man. And, you know, there's that, you know, you go through from sober to, I love you, man, to 2 minutes later, you're getting punched in the face.
Exactly.
Hey, Koss, I don't know how many of these are actually people, but I'm going to try to get some of them on if they actually are. I hear from you far too seldom. I enjoy it.
You know, it's one of those things about, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm so foursquare for the legalization of cannabis. I have yet to run into somebody, no matter how stoned, that wants to take a poke at me.
Nope. Pat, dude, pass the Cheetos.
You know, at the very worst, they're going to say, hey, man, this is great. You know,
this is cool.
That's the worst I've ever had. And I won't even tell you how many drunks I've had to have waltzing lessons from.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And the lampshades aren't safe.
No.
Koss, you have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Our good friend, the Cossack. And let's see if you're somebody. You're not. Are you somebody? Nope. I got to do something about this phone system. The rollover's not working right. Hi, who have I got?
It's me, Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm just glad to be back.
Yeah, I missed you yesterday.
Well, I was up to my eyeballs in computer.
Yeah,
nightmare.
I heard you.
Yeah.
You were talking with David, and I believe you were talking. I didn't hear all of it because I was having to cook. And were you talking about states' rights?
Well, yeah, that came into it. Sure.
Yeah. Well, can I give you some of the things that I know about historically? Some things I witnessed, and some things I know about.
Sure.
Okay, I'll start with Social Security. Both of my grandmothers, they were widows at pretty young age, with a bunch of children, and they had no income. And when they got older, you know, weren't able to work, they had to live where whoever would take them in, and without any income. Sometimes people would get welfare, maybe $5 or $10 a month.
From the county, because
yeah.
it was on the county back then.
Yeah, but then a lot of people that didn't have family, they would have to go sometime to what they call the old folks home. And then some people, a lot of them, they didn't have anybody, and they, especially in the big cities, they just died out in the streets. And so I saw, like, after Social Security, like a lot of people that, like my aunts and all like that, and different people, their lives were better with Social because most of them had their own little homes, and they quit paying, you know, didn't have to pay on them anymore, a lot of them. And they had the Social Security, and they were living pretty good. I used to be kind of jealous of them, because when, especially when I was working two and three jobs.
Sure.
But that's what I want to say about that. I don't know, you know, sometimes people don't realize how bad it used to be. And as far as states' rights, as late as the early 60s, I had a cousin, his wife and him were having trouble, and she had an affair with, nobody knew that it was with a black guy, this beautiful baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to a club, and somebody took a picture and they put it in the newspaper. Well, because of that, I don't know what would happen eventually, but because of that, I don't know if it was the state or the county or what, they took that baby away from her. She never saw that baby again.
Oh, Lord.
And also, before like in, I'd say, 65, the hospitals were segregated. And the only jobs that a black person could have in a hospital was either the lowliest nurse's aide or housekeeping or cook. That was basically it. And they could never have a position of authority. And I remember the hospital that we had, the blacks had to go in the basement. It was a little bitty place. Kind of like the back of a bus. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't very big. And if they ran out of beds upstairs, the white people would go down there, and the black people wouldn't have any place to go. Then maybe they could go in the hall or something. But I always thought it was kind of strange that they could take care of shaving you for a surgery and all like that, you know, the little nurse's face, and they mm-hmm. would be so sweet, most of them. And I used to think, oh, you could be so nice. And anyway, that's a lot of what went on. And that was before any civil rights really began. And that was definitely after the middle 60s when we started having any kind of civil rights. And then they had the the one they don't like, the where the black can get a job.
Oh, affirmative action.
Affirmative action, yeah. And that's how they got into positions of authority, you know, were able to get jobs that they couldn't get before because they weren't allowed to have those kind of jobs. And that...
Well, every last piece of hateful, racist legislation or theory or philosophy that has ever been trotted out in the Deep South, Juanita, has been trotted out under the rubric of states' rights. That's why it's that's why it's such a poisonous phrase. You know,
but that's why the U.S. government had to come in and just look at Mississippi and what all
and Arkansas
there.
And Alabama and
Florida.
Yeah, and that fool standing in the university doorway, George Wallace, who's roasting in hell now. You know, saying. Segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever.
Right.
And Lester Maddox walking around with his big, was it
with
Lester Maddox
axe.
With with that axe handle?
Yeah.
That's all states' rights in action. Okay. And the Republicans have largely, with the connivance of the Democrats who crossed over after the civil rights movement. Have resurrected states' rights,
right.
and folks like the libertarians have jumped on it as if it is something new. You know, the idea, there is in this country a concept that while we will have majority rule, the majority will not be able to tyrannize the minority. And the fact of the matter is, that's, you know, when you use states' rights to hide your desire to ramrod something down the people's throats, like a woman's right to control the functions of her own body.
Yeah.
Then you know it's no. You know, there in Florida where you live, Juanita, states' rights was used as the argument for keeping poor Terry Schiavo's brain sloshing around like unset jello inside her skull, in order to create what Florida Senator Mel Martinez admitted out front was nothing but a political ploy.
Yeah. Of course it was.
So, your points are very well taken.
Yeah, and I could go on and on, you know, even worse. Now, when my daddy was coming up, they had, he never was in the Klan, but they had the lynchings and stuff, and they lynched white people, too.
Yeah, but not near the numbers that, no.
Oh, no, I know that, but to me, I've always thought, they were slaves. They didn't care. They didn't care if you were white or not.
Well, and frankly, the
Klan was the black people. That was the difference.
The Klan, you know, the Klan is another manifestation of libertarian personal freedom. It just is.
Right.
Juanita, I've got to roll along and see if I can hit a couple more of these. If these people are actually people and not people who have hung up and left me a busy signal,
I thought I'd put a little.
A little perspective. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very kindly, and you have a wonderful evening, all right?
You too.
Bye
Bye-bye.
Now. Our good friend Juanita in Florida. And let's see here. Yeah, quitters. So we're a little over halfway done with tonight's Tuesday night edition of Head On. And, you know, there are, let's see, John Fox was kind enough to post some results. Here's the latest line from the eighth race at Hialeah. Among the Democrats in New Hampshire, apparently Hillary Clinton is leading at, this is with 6% of precincts reporting, Hillary Clinton leading with 37% to Barack Obama's 35% and John Edwards' 17%. Among the freaks on the other side, with 3% of precincts reporting, 39% McCain, Willard Romney, 30%, Reverend Huxterby at 12%, Mayor 9/11, Giuliani at 8%, Ron Paul at 7%, and write-ins for GOP equals a full 1%, if you can imagine. It's going to be a long, long, long winter. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
This is Alan.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Oh, hanging in there. How about you?
It's great to be back. I hate even missing a day.
I'm glad you enjoy your job.
Oh, I do. I love it. I just love it.
I want to say something about Obama from a different perspective that I haven't heard anybody talk about. Being that I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, I know that black people can be just as theocratical towards religion as white folks. And I'm hoping that he's not going to be pushing that on us, religion on us. I hope he keeps a good separation of church and state.
Well, you've certainly got a better chance of that, and I don't think I don't think it's necessarily correct to ally Barack Obama with the religionistas in the African American community, as it is to say ally Reverend Huckabee and Mitt Romney with the religionistas in their party. Because they will act according to the tenets of the marching orders they get from their faiths, whether it be Romney's Mormonism or Huckabee's Southern Baptistness. On the other hand, I don't think you can say that about Obama. What's interesting, though, Alan, is the smear that is already out there. Saw it yesterday and didn't get to do anything with it. But the story, the slug on the email that I got was Barack Obama's racist church. This is sickening. And it comes from one of the most vile of the right-wingers, a creep named Ronald Kessler. And what he writes, we've got nothing but 11 months of this to look forward to from the Republican side, because it is going to be slime from the top to slime at the bottom, Alan. Imagine if Mitt Romney's church proclaimed on its website that it is unashamedly white. The media would pounce and Romney's presidential candidacy would be over. Yet that is exactly what Barack Obama's church says on its website, except in reverse. We are a congregation which is unashamedly black and unapologetically Christian, says the Trinity. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Here we go. Barack Obama's racist church.
I didn't know they were starting up all that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Black people would be more considerate to minorities than white people will. If they were, had the White House, there's a black man in the White House.
Well, yeah, I don't. I'm not nearly as busted up about the racial issue where Barack Obama is concerned as I am the corporate issue.
I realize that too about the corporate issue, but. When it comes to race, I'm talking about religion, not just...
Sure, I understand.
Race. Yeah. I just don't like theocracy. That's one thing that's always bugged me about the Republican Party. And then people like Tom to educate me about the fascism of the Republican Party. We need either one of those.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. But it's... I don't care where a person goes to church, as long as they don't try to make me go there too.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know what I mean? Because that's one of it's a third rail, and people are gonna make the choices that they want in that regard. And frankly, I don't want to make them see things my way, and I don't want to have to be compelled to see things their way.
Yeah, I think didn't he vote against some kind of thing that would hurt low income people if they try to file for bankruptcy?
I think the bankruptcy legislation predates his arrival in the Senate. I could be wrong, but I think it does. That ban.
Well,
yeah.
I hope he.
Go ahead.
Well, I just hope that he'd make a pretty good president if he does get the nomination and wins the election.
He will make a better. He will make a better president, Alan, than any of the people that the other side is offering.
Oh, I agree 100% about that.
And you know, that, I mean, that's when. It, when is Alabama's primary is on so-called Super Tuesday, right?
I can't remember.
I think it will be interesting to see how many of the Democrats actually even make a passing attempt to campaign in Alabama or Mississippi or Tennessee or Arkansas, because frankly, the Democratic strategy has been to concede the Deep South to the Republican Party for how many elections now. And I think it's a wrong strategy, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Democrats take a pass on him again.
Yeah, and when it comes to Don Siegelman, do whatever you can to help that man. I've always think about him in prison. He shouldn't be there. He's a political prisoner.
He is a political prisoner, and I saw a link today to a letter that he had written from prison to the people who have been trying to create a stir for him. And it's Rovian politics. I don't think there's a shadow of a doubt left in it. This was a cook job. It was payback by the Bush administration, and it goes to show how evil and sleazy and mean they can be. Because Don Siegelman, going back to the late 90s, patently refused to support George Bush's bid for the presidency, and he's been paying ever since.
Well, if anybody who's listening that or that's from that area or anywhere in the country, really, write a letter and send it to the Birmingham News or the Anniston Star or the Tuscaloosa newspaper or the Montgomery Advertiser.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to help the man out.
I agree. Alan, you take care, all right?
Okay.
Good talking to you.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see if you've stayed with us. You have. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I've just been sitting here watching this stuff for the last couple of days going, gee, isn't it amazing how we have a virtual replay of the last couple of cycles? Well, let's see, the media wants Bill Bradley elected, so of course they boo and hiss at Al Gore. Media doesn't want Howard Dean. Amazingly enough, one audio line is left to a mic so he gets that scream out.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing now how, like I said, anything Hillary does is wrong, anything Obama does is right.
Yeah.
You
don't have to be a diehard Obama supporter or a hardcore Hillary hater or supporter or anything to look at these things and realize the way it's being manipulated by the media.
I'm wondering how much of it is now that they've decided, well, we want the McCain versus Obama fight. Because if you watch over on the other side, that's who they're pushing now is John McCain. The one that got to me the other night was, and we know we're not a supporter of either one, but like I said, it's amazing how 12% was a McCain comeback and a 10% was a Paul failure.
Well, and not just that. You know, Ron Paul gets excluded from the fake news debate because he didn't have the right draw in Iowa, but Rudy Giuliani's got 4% and he gets a seat at the end of the desk.
Uh-huh.
You know, on the other side,
I think in New Hampshire was polling like at 10%.
Yeah, well, the last numbers I saw, Ron Paul is pulling down 10 or 11%. I just read it a minute ago and I can't even remember who was right in front of him, but there was a 1 percentage point difference. And I can see where Republicans in New Hampshire would think well of Ron Paul.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of independents up there, and unfortunately, a lot of them, that's going to come close to his people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because some of his arguments are some of the, what you guys would call the old Republican arguments.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you. I still think he's, like you say, crazier than a sprayed roach. What's this?
Yeah, I'd like to think otherwise, but I think you're asleep, Luke, if you don't see the daggum horse race.
Well, and the thing is, you're just sitting here going, you know, for the Obama people, congratulations. I hope it lasts for you. But just wait till he's the only one left. You will see people burn 180 degrees. And everything they liked about Obama, the next day they'll hate about him.
Well, yeah, and that's...
If that winds up being what it is.
That's one of the problems of courting the so-called independent vote, because I don't believe there are any independents in the United States. There aren't, because it's a two-party system, and ultimately you choose one of two. And most people, I think, have had it in their head who they're going to choose.
if he's our nominee, I'll vote for him happily. You know, that's fine. But I still say this kumbaya, let's all make friends with Republicans. This is not the right year to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that sort of...
Because like I said, for the next 4 years, we're going to have somebody that needs to be in there kicking and biting to get things.
And I don't want anybody sitting down with these rotten bastards and singing kumbaya with them and weaving daisy little chains of clover out of the grass.
Because whoever's elected, like we've said before, out of 4 years, first 3 years at least, are going to be spent trying to clean up some of this crap that's gone on in the last seven, eight years.
And it's going to be a straight uphill climb, Luke.
Because like we've said before, it's not getting the big people out at the top; it's all the little people they've shoved in at the bottom. But you're going to have to go in, be like pulling ticks on a hound.
Yep, without a doubt.
And the thing was, I was thinking about this the other day, and I saw it one someplace on the web, but I can't think of where right now. I said, You know that David and I have told you, and you've looked at it too. Like I say, look at the Harold Ford race 2 years ago, and that's going to be the playbook.
Oh, that's the model. And in fact,
527s are already, I'm sure, making their commercial.
Well, whose campaign was it? Wasn't it Romney's campaign that the guy went to work for who did the Harold Ford ads?
Oh,
you know, the Harold Ford ads. Yeah,
I can't remember which one it was. It was either McCain or Romney. I can't.
I'm pretty sure it was Romney. And that guy was brought on board and paid specifically to deal with the Obama issue should the Obama issue arise.
And like I say, the 527, there'll be some company that they won't be able to connect to the Republican Party, but amazingly enough, all their lines, as you'll find on their website, looks like they read right off of the GOP website.
But we're not coordinating the campaign because that's illegal. Yeah.
Just because we
and again, the thing that bears
on every Monday morning.
The thing that bears remembering in this is that kind of sleazy political negative attack advertising, Luke, does not have to sway
big chunks
of people. All it has to do is speak to America's lowest common denominator clearly enough to get them to come out of their alcoholic, hate-filled Klan rally attending stupor long enough to go to the polls and show the little registration card and go in and say, I ain't a voting for that kind of feller.
Yep. You know, and it's like you said, you haven't got to play to 20%. You just got to play to the small 2% here and there. Just enough here and there to change it, you know, places where it'll be, so. The worst thing about this screws up watching Oberman, because all they're doing is showing this dang.
Yeah, but you know what? He got his licks in yesterday. Yeah, Bill O'Reilly puppet theater was.
Oh, that was just so good. And the thing is, it's funny to see that. Then you turn go over like to NewsHounds or something and see what the spiel is that O'Reilly's putting out. It was just a verbal confrontation. Gee, is that why you pushed that guy? Because he was verbal?
Yeah, is that no? Actually, it's not. Is that why you pushed him?
Do that?
Is that why you committed a criminal battery? Because New Hampshire's been there for a while, and I bet that they've pretty much still got a common law definition of the criminal act of battery, and that is usually expressed as an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature.
It's like saying you just wonder if afterwards if he got to talk to the guys in the sunglasses with no necks. you know, with a little earbud.
Oh, there wasn't any. There wasn't any afterward. They come up to him
after what we saw. I'm sure they probably went after that, and since he was sort of like, don't do this again.
Well, the thing is, I guess Barack Obama probably couldn't stand the publicity of having such a thing happen. But Lord, wouldn't it be sweet to see that guy, that 6'8" gentleman, go to somewhere, you know, whether it's the authorities or small
office.
Well, no, and just charge him with misdemeanor battery.
That would be so nice.
And make him put up a bond and make him show up for court hearings periodically. Because, you know, it might very well, like I said, I'm sure that Barack Obama doesn't want that, but it would be the greatest public service that has been done in recent memory by any politician I can think of. To get that guy convicted of battery and maybe a 30-day sentence in the stir.
Well, the thing of it is, it doesn't have to be Obama. It could be the guy that you know, the assistant.
Well, I know, but I mean, it would have to be that assistant, the 6'8" guy. But there's no way he could do that as a free agent. He would have to have some level of blessing from the Obama campaign to do it.
Yeah, it's like I say, you got to wonder Bill if Oberman and company thought about contacting him.
Oh, I'm sure they're working on it.
Wait to see what happens this Friday with Marr.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Well, like I say, they already said he ain't going to have the monologue and he ain't going to have new rules.
Yeah, because he'd have to write them himself.
And well, because you had to put together, the photos and all that other stuff.
Well, not just that. I have a feeling that Bill Maher has some level of respect for the Writers Guild.
He does.
And as such, it would be a slap in their face for him to try to do that.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's like, say, you know, I enjoyed the thing the other night when Bloomberg came on and gave the award to Letterman's beard.
That beard just freaked me out. I mean, I'm sorry, it's fairly well groomed, but he looks like a guy who came in from prospecting out in the desert looking for the lost Dutchman mine, got a little trimmed up, a little trim, and headed for the saloon.
Put down his bag of gold dust and got himself cleaned up.
Yep.
Oh, I tell you. Oh well.
Of course, I don't know. I looked at it pretty closely, Luke. It might be a glue on.
Well, apparently not, because apparently they cut it off last night with the razor.
Oh, okay. Well, that goes to show where I was.
You know, I'm surprised that Stewart and Leno did. Stewart and Colbert did do something. Come out with.
Well, you know, we had a Mountaineer fan who put his beard up on eBay.
Oh God.
Maybe Letterman should have done that.
That will work. That works for me.
I think the purchaser said his prepubescent son was going to use it for underarm hair. Now, that's just gross. I understand. But... Well, Luke, you take care, all right?
All right, bud. You have a good
talk to you later. Bye now. I love Luke's attention to the media circus. And I've got an email here that came in from Dr. Bill O'Brien today. He was all raring to go yesterday, and I wasn't able for us to. So as a consequence, he wasn't able. But he dropped me a note this morning. He said, Bob, I wish there was a way to recover Chris Matthews' appearance this morning on Joe Scarborough's Morning Joe. What a revealing commentary he provided on the Democratic primary. After Joe talked about how Obama might actually win this thing, and he laid out some reasons, Matthews replied that Hillary would win because the behind-the-scenes powers that control the Democratic Party, same thing in the Republican Party, the high rollers who walk the beaches of Santa Monica in Birkenstocks and make the decisions that matter, they will be circling the wagons around Hillary and designing a warmer, softer, more human Hillary that the people have said they want by voting for Obama in Iowa and New Hampshire. Quote, do you really believe that Obama can beat the Clinton machine and the $100 million war chest that will be opened up after New Hampshire, Matthews asked? Dr. Bill says, I thought that his comments were so matter-of-fact as to be almost prophetic. In effect, he was saying that the presidential election process is like the bowl championship series system, the BCS system in college football. It's all being run from behind the scenes by the high rollers who benefit from the big money that the system generates. A national playoff to determine a national champion in football? That would be like allowing the people to really choose the president. Better to keep the system we have, allow the people to think that they control it, let the big dollars flow, you know, like when Rich Rodriguez went to Michigan, and leave the system pretty much as it is. So, says Matthews, watch for the new Hillary that will be created in coming days. She'll be just what the voters of New Hampshire and Iowa said that they wanted when they voted for Obama, but it won't be him. Bill adds, what a fascinating look behind the big curtain in the political world of Oz. Yeah, no kidding. And of course, there is this audio out here. This is just, I don't know, maybe we need national legislation or something that makes, that compels Chris Matthews to drop trowel every time he says Hillary's name so that we can see if, in fact, you know, that happens. But it was a rather cute little moment when Senator Clinton sort of alluded to the same thing. Check this out.
She's 13 points down, mm-hmm. But then you actually ran into her at a press conference.
We had a press conference with her yesterday, and I asked her about the fact that how are you going to get us out of the war in Iraq? Any better than Barack Obama? And she gave a long answer in which she basically said, I'm going to get us out responsibly. In other words, we're going to stay there for a while. And I thought that was a conservative answer. She's been consistent. I think she is genuinely more hawkish than he is. I think that's coming across because there's no political gain in saying that now. So I think there's some authentic difference now between the two of them. He's more a man of the anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. He talks about Scooter Libby justice. He talks a language I'm used to and find favorable. And she is using a language, a much more conservative, hawkish language, which I think is interesting in this environment up here. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but then it got into kind of a strange thing. She said, there's some men out there who are obsessed with me, looking at me.
Talking about you.
Yeah, well, I think she was. Let's take a look at this if you have the clip.
Yeah, let's run the clip,
DJ. I am fascinated with this thing.
The essential difference between the two of you and how fast we're getting out of Iraq.
The essential difference is that I believe I will get our troops out as quickly and responsibly as is possible.
And he won't,
you know,
be responsible?
I'm just talking about what I will do, Chris.
Well, what's the difference between
the two? Well, you'll have to draw the difference, but let me
you
tell you.
You have to draw the difference.
No, let me tell you what I've done. I'm not on your show. I'm answering your question.
Please come on the show.
Yeah, well, right.
Is that an answer?
You know, I don't know what to do with men who are obsessed with me. I honestly, I've never understood it.
Where's the rest of the clip? Where's the other clip? Get show the rest of that.
We'll get the rest of that.
You gotta show the best part of it. God, let's get the cutting guy.
We will get it.
Where's the best part?
Christopher.
Not obsession. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Okay.
Oh my God.
Chris? Did you?
Love
in the afternoon.
Only on MSNBC.
Yeah.
You want to do a slow-mo with that?
Yeah, I would. Hey, TJ, if we can get that in a little bit.
Really. We can have a neutral observer or something, because America doesn't need to see it. But really, when he reaches over and pinches her on the cheek and she slaps him, you know, lightly on the cheek, you know, kind of lovingly there, sort of like a, you know, a mafiosi would reach over and, you know, oh, brother. But, I don't, you know, they've been rooting for her for so long because the right wing wants to run against her so badly that seeing the, Dr. Bill's right, seeing the rubber mask come off is absolutely astonishing. So, you know, other stuff on the horizon tonight, lots of it. The White House came out today and said there's no signs of recession, no signs at all. Of course, definitely no recession. Meanwhile, headline from CNNMoney.com: Father of Bush tax cuts, recession likely. Harvard economist Martin Feldstein says more tax relief, deeper Fed rate cuts needed if U.S. is to avoid recession.
Nobody's talking about a recession. Not, no, no. And never was heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. 9/11.
Martin Feldstein, the Harvard economist, credited with being one of the fathers of the Bush administration tax cuts, says the U.S. economy is now likely to slip into a recession, and that avoiding one will take a new round of tax cuts and interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. You know, when we do build the new studio, I'm gonna like have some sort of wood plank, and it'll be especially good if it's on video. Where I can just beat my head against it for a little bit. You get this? The Bush tax cuts and the voodoo economics of the Bush administration drove us into recession, and now we need more tax cuts to keep it from happening? I remember a Carl Sandburg poem where he wrote, "We raise more corn to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land." Yeah. I've been to this movie. George Bush campaigned in 1999 and 2000 saying, our economy's too hot. We need a tax cut to cool down the economy. And then he gets into office and the economy starts heading down the toilet, and he says, the economy's too cool. We need a tax cut to hot up the economy. These are one-trick ponies. Daddy, I scraped my knee. We need a tax cut to help the scab form. Well, darn, dear. I burned the cake. Obviously, you need a tax cut so you can buy a better oven. You know, the Iraqis are going to bomb us. Well, you know, we can't protect America without a tax cut.
This guy's a Harvard professor, and somebody actually pays him fungible goods, money, to say this stupid, insane crap.
Feldstein is president. Yeah. He said he now believes a recession is likely, as he pointed to both a report from the Institute of Supply Management showing manufacturing activity in decline for the first time in almost a year. We manufacture stuff in America? Really? Still? You're not kidding? And Friday's December jobs report that showed a jump in the unemployment rate to a two-year high.
It's not just clear that the lower interest rates and monetary policy more generally will have enough traction because of conditions in the credit market. We should have some fiscal stimulus to back that up. Increasingly mixed economic indicators. The precise mix is not as important as a decision that what the economy needs is an additional amount of fiscal stimulus on top of the lower interest rate. That can be cut in personal taxes. It can be a business investment credit of the sort that we had in 2003 or some combination of the two. Oh, my aching back.
What do you say about these fools?
Idiots.
I mean, I'm looking at this guy's picture. You know what? You know how it is with economics, PhDs and stuff. I'm betting this guy wears slip-on shoes because he can't tie his own shoelaces. That's how it is. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
This is Kate.
Hey, Kate, how are you, dear?
I feel like I'm about 45 miles south of Mount Belzoni tonight.
Well, thanks for calling. I wait all night for calls like these.
Oh, you're welcome. That sun's just fitting to come up over the into the skylight. Nobody has a clue what we're talking about, and I feel the same way about the show tonight. I thought we were going to talk about Cold River, and then we got off on something. And,
well, you know, I try, Kate, but, you know.
I know. I gave me an opportunity to get up and get some chores done because my roomie is heading out for Jackson tomorrow, and there needed to be some work done, and I got some supper cooked and stuff because I thought, I just can't do this. This election thing is just goofy. And I'm glad that you're bringing up the economy because I can't remember if I talked about this last week, but I listened because I have a friend going over to do HIV AIDS prevention in Kenya. I think she's not going now, but I've been listening to the news on BBC and Radio Africa a lot, and I'm hearing, aside from that news from Kenya, hearing a lot about how Europe is, and Asia are talking about our economy, and it just don't look good, and nobody's talking. All they care about is that misogynistic crap that you were just playing from whoever those people were about Hillary, and I'm just so tired. God, I'm just angry, just mad. I mean, it's just...
Well, you know, Kate, I mean, there are some realities at play here, and there is some stuff that has meaning for our experiment in the Republic, but it is so obscured by, you know, the fifth race at Hialeah factor that we can't talk about it.
Mm-mm.
I mean, there are legitimate discussions to be had as to how Senator Clinton stacks up against Senator Obama, who stacks up against John Edwards, and whether or not, in point of fact, everything that's any good that's being talked about by all three of them has been talked about for the last 4 years by Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the economy is tanking and lots of other really spooky shit going on and tornadoes in Wisconsin and Missouri this week. And
Arkansas.
Yeah, that's right. And we had tornado watches and warnings here in Mississippi all day. And it's just some really strange stuff. I just feel like this shift on the planet, it's just not global. It's not global warming. It's climate change. It's climate change. It's not global warming. God. Anyway, then they called about, I forget now why. I didn't mean, I realized that I called too soon. I jumped right in the middle of your theater.
No. It's fine. Not to worry.
Your Harvard professor guy with the slip on, that was a good piece.
Well, do you doubt it?
No.
You know, I mean, you know how it is with these guys who are economics PhDs at Harvard and Princeton and Yale and so forth. I don't know where the men's room is, so I'm going to pee on the floor.
And yet
they'll sit there and do statistical analysis down to the nth degree to prove to you that we need a tax cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. We whatever. And I'm in a kind of an odd position. I was trying to find, oh God, somebody there about $168 or $320 from moving into a Mima cottage and couldn't find room. Couldn't find money to get her in a motel over here because whatever. And I got to chatting with the Red Cross hurricane disaster relief person, and we have so much in common that we, she said something about me being a case manager, and I said, oh, no, I'm not a case manager. I did that for 100 years, and I've been down here. This is my second tour in on the Gulf Coast, and I know too much. I don't want my name on anything. I realized, especially when Ann comes down in February, if that's still going to happen, I don't know how to do expose, and I don't know how to do reporting. I just let my mouth ramble, and people agree or don't agree, and I don't know who to trust. And somebody walks in the office today, and I said something about funding, and they kind of turned red in the face, like they got the grant and we didn't, and they didn't know how to talk about it, and somebody said, oh, are you working with Jim Yancey? And I said, well, yeah, I don't know if I was supposed to say yes or no. You know, I don't know who to trust. It's getting really ugly down here. And I'm having little ladies ask me, where's the Clinton money? And I said, excuse me? I just didn't. And then it dawned on me. She said, well, you know, when they did that big thing with that Bush and President Clinton, and where did that money go? And I said, honey, I have no idea. Now, what did you say your last four of your Social Security were? I just had to change the subject. I mean, everybody's asking, where did the money go? Where did the money go? So it's...
Are they really, I mean, are they really asking like they don't think it went into cronies' pockets and so forth? I mean, anybody with a half a brain, Kate.
Well...
You know, and I'm not trying to disparage the effort, and God knows I'm not disparaging the giving that the American people did in a brilliant and loving and heartfelt manner. But, you know, when you're doing that kind of thing in the middle of a crony administration like what is operating, and you know, Jesus, it's a criminal enterprise being run out of the White House. If it was anybody else in the world, they'd already have been indicted under the Racketeering and Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act, RICO, you know. Is anybody surprised that it's not reaching the people? It wasn't meant to reach the people.
I'm
not yelling at you. Please understand.
No. You couldn't yell at me anyway. You ain't big enough. The people who are asking the questions are disabled and elderly and confused, and they've lived in mold for the last 2 years and can't breathe and don't even realize they're disabled. And I get to the point now where I do an intake on the telephone, and even if the person's not disabled, I say, do you live in a FEMA trailer? They say, yeah, and I just mark disabled, you know, because they've got respiratory problems. And I run into some more people with rash problems. And,
yeah, you know. So what you're saying is it's sort of a default position that after mm-hmm. you've been in a FEMA trailer long enough, if you weren't disabled going in, you are now.
And the lady today said, well, that FEMA inspector I've got formaldehyde in my trailer, they came out and said it was 10 times higher than it should be, and FEMA offered me $4,000 moving expenses if I'd move 50 miles from here. Her great-grandchildren live here. I mean, she's been here since the 80s, and she said, I said, well, yeah, and she said the guy comes out monthly to inspect the trailer and, you know, check the pipes and the drips and the leaks and, you know, make sure everything's okay, but he won't even come in the trailer. He sits in my lawn chair and does his paperwork out by my front door and then goes away. God.
Oh, Lord.
And they won't let Mima Cottages park in Pascagoula. If you don't buy property, if you own property and you're building on it, they'll bring in the cottage and set it up, and you can live in it for 2 years while you're building. Otherwise, Pascagoula won't let anybody put a Mima cottage down if you don't own the property. Oh, God. You know, it's just one thing after another. It's just so big, so big. But I just wanted to say I got in a conversation today with a gentleman about our Social Security increases, and he made over $900 a month. And I said, oh, you got a nice increase. And he said, yeah, all right, like $21 or something like that. And he said, and my friend got $25. You know, and it reminded me that I wanted to repeat what I did on Friday. Again.
Well, wait. Before you do, I want to share something with you, if I could, Kate. I've got to find it here. But after you mentioned the business, the stuff about the Social Security increase, that kind of thing, I got an email, if I can find it. Let's see here. Here we go. This person wrote and said, "My husband's raise plus my Social Security increase is $201. My husband's increase in his Medicaid premium is $208. We fell behind $7. So much for giving it to the horn." And then noted, and it's true, I give what I can offer. I give what I can after the bills are paid at the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, I forgot about the Medicaid stuff going up today because I made this big pitch because of Rick's offer. I said, ooh, we could make $34 by putting in my increase off of my Social Security. I forgot about the Medicaid thing. Well,
yeah, that's the thing that we're dealing with, Kate. Everybody, to one extent or another, is getting bitten. And while, you know, when the economic downturn really, and what'll happen, Kate, just to get square on this and make sure everybody understands, what will happen with this economic business is that the Bush administration will howl that there is no recession until about a month to 2 weeks before the presidential election in November, at which point they will say that they have determined that there is an economic downturn that is being fueled by market fears that a Democrat will be elected.
Of course. That's happening already. I mean, that... Okay, yeah. You're right. You're right. They do it every time. And that just point... That just brings me around to another point that that I almost forgot. Social Security. Oh, I'm glad that you were off the air last night because I had the opportunity. I have a little bitty little studio to live in if I choose to stay in my room. And if I choose to go out into the rest of the community where I live, where two other people live, I watch television. And so being off the air last night, I'd already heard the show that was on, and I went out and watched TV and watched reruns because there's no writers, you know. Whatever.
Right, yeah.
And I just am so grateful that we have something like The Horn to participate in every night because I see... It gives me a broader understanding, because I'm forced to watch TV, kind of. It gives me a broader understanding of where the head, where the society's mindset is, because you get frozen in front of the TV and watch 55 channels on the TV out in the other room. And we watched a rerun of ER. And so... I understand. I'm beginning to understand where people's heads are at when they say, you know, I'm not interested in that global warming stuff. That's just so much horse crap, whatever. The tap that we've been given for media and the exposure that people have is pretty sad. It's a sad state. And when you you and Cossack were talking about reading, yeah, but people aren't literate anymore. And they have to have something moving in front of their face because they been brought up on television.
Because they're, and you know, there are studies out there, Kate, that suggest pretty clearly that there's hardwiring inside the brain that goes on at the earliest ages of infantile development.
Oh, absolutely.
And what do more parents do than any other thing? They plop their kids in front of a video screen, even with good intentions, because, you know, they've gotten them the new DVD that's guaranteed to have lots of black and red and white, which are colors that babies identify, and there's a Mozart soundtrack, and blah, 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 blah.
Barney doing Mozart, yeah.
And you know, and so...
Barney doing the magic flute.
Oh, Jesus, don't. Oh. The Barney of Seville. There. Nah, gotcha.
God, you one up. Okay, that's cool. Don't get me started. Yeah, and it's true.
And so the kid is addicted from before it's conscious of its ability. I mean, it's comparable to what Cossack mentioned with fetal alcohol syndrome or crack babies or...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so with the literacy rate, I mean, people have to have whatever they're participating in moving in colors in front of them. And so reading, just the book doesn't jump around in color, then people aren't going to be interested in it. And I see that. I see more illiteracy in the chair that I'm sitting in. It just astounds me, and it's not just a racial thing.
But by the same token, Kate, when you sat there and you watched that episode of ER, at some point in time, to some degree or another, some small portion of your brain was engaged by it.
Absolutely.
And you sat there, and you know your jaw got a little slack, maybe a little bit of dribble rolled out the corner, and you just...
And it only takes about 90 seconds to drop into... Is it the alpha state? That's the next level down from conscious, you know...
Yeah, something... Yeah, exactly. I mean, the drug works fast.
It does. It's very, very fast, yeah. And people walk through a room in the doctor's office or something, and there's a commercial on, and everybody turns around and looks at the commercial.
Because we were off last night, I, too, watched some television.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a little bit in between of switching. I sort of switch back and forth between the football game. I know you hate it, but I also switched over to watch the premiere episode of this season, and I never get to because it's Monday nights at 10. This season's premiere episode of No Reservations with Tony Bourdain. And I didn't feel like I was getting poisoned because it was good writing. He travels all over the world, and you know, I get a little, but it's the same thing because I get the vicarious ability to see what it's like somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, apparently the national dish of wherever it was he was is something called chili crab, and boy, do I want to try it.
Oh my!
And you know, just beautiful, beautiful foods that you know nobody would ever dream of making around here. There was a dish that was chili pepper based pork broth with this evil red dye number 5 in it and cracked mutton bones with mutton on the ends, just uh-huh. floating in it. It looked like something out of a Friday the 13th movie.
Wonderful.
But at the end of it, they were putting plastic straws down into the mutton bones to suck out the last of the marrow.
Absolutely.
And boy, did that speak to the Scotsman in me.
That's the lanolin. I love the smell of sheep's wool. We raise sheep in Montana, and I love that smell, and I love the taste of good mutton, and oh, my God, yeah.
But I caught myself, the point is, I caught myself saying, well, you know, I don't feel guilty for watching TV because this isn't so bad.
It's educational.
But you know what? There are books out there, and this guy, and Tony Bourdain's been on this program, and he's a brilliant writer. And you know, the fact of the matter is, I'd rather read the guy's writing any day of the week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because you can write in the margin. Or not.
Yeah, and you can bring it alive inside your own brain. And frankly, no matter how hard we try, it's a constant struggle here to get the kids to read instead of sitting in front of the electric demon box.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's,
and you know, at least twice a month, I threaten to shoot it and throw it out in the yard if they don't go and pick up a damn book.
Yeah, right.
And of course, I get a completely logical response from my kids. Dad, we have to read in school. We read in school. We can read, Dad. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, guys. It's I don't doubt that you can read.
Yeah, that's what the point.
I want you to want to read. And then, of course, the little genetic thing, the little switch inside my brain goes, "Hey, dumbass, this is not the way to get them to want to read."
No.
You know, read, damn it. I can see the next Laura Bush literacy program coming already. Read, damn it.
Just say yes.
Oh, just say yeah. Riff. Reading is fundamental.
How do you spell that? Oh, anyway, well, I just wanted to encourage people that I just got a little bit of taste of what it's like to not have the horn last night one more time, and I just wanted.
Well, you know, and it's kind of nice because we are up now to bless his heart, Rick Goodner, having to match something on the order of close to $600 worth of this month's contributions.
All right.
But again, that what he matches does not go toward our monthly.
I was going to ask that.
This is the building fund.
Okay. And so the
Oh God, I'm a televangelist. I've got a building fund now, Kate. What are we Oh God.
I'm
You know, every good preacher's got a building fund.
I want it to have sequins on it, and I want it to be lavender, and I want it to match Peter's boa, because if we ever get a chance to go out, my prayer cloth that I would wear on my head has to match his boa.
Good at all unless I get the white three-piece suit, though. I mean, and I've found a couple in polyester, but I'm not going to go that low.
Bell bottoms, wide collar. So how much do we have in the January... as of the 8th of January, in the January fund?
Almost $600 out of the $3,000.
But you said that the money that was coming in is going to the building fund.
No, what Rick matches goes to the building fund.
Oh.
So every contribution to the upkeep of the horn, Rick will match in terms of the building fund.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. So we got what now in January?
We're at $600.
And it's only the 8th. Well, let's go more.
Yeah, and what we had to do was we had to carry over because we didn't hit the full 3,500, but we got close. So we we're still $1,000 away with the stuff of the bills that we have to pay. So we're at 3,000. So we're $2,400 away.
Yeah, yeah. And we can't ever catch up. I mean, you just can't play catch up, and it's going to be just tough. And I'm just so scared that the mics are going to go cold and.
Oh, God, they've put my head on the white disco suit in the chat room, Kate.
I saw that.
Oh, I should keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm, the white suit. Yeah, you should.
But at least it's not Boba the Hutt.
Thank you.
Here it comes.
Don't. Oh, God, you guys, quit it. That's funny. You and Peter. Mm-mm-mm. That is too.
Yeah, and see what Peter's doing. And see, there are for the people, you know, again talking about things visual on the radio. There are emoticons that people use in the chat room, and we have a truly devilish moderator. Yep, there's Baba. Bless her heart. ELO comes up with these things, and they're just genius.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to go to the chat room to see these things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus, they put John Fox's head on the white suit now. If you haven't been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, it's free. Why haven't you? This is just the height of silliness.
Please do. We're not. Oh, I was going to say we're not like Nova M. We don't have to pay to get into the chat room.
I was trying not to be catty, but, you know.
Hey, I can talk this way.
Yes, you can. It's for free speech radio, you know.
Conversation radio. You were talking about people sitting on hold for 3 hours to get on Malloy. Well,
yeah, and I felt like kind of a dick for saying that, so I apologize.
I think that it's because if you're calling in on the 800 number, you don't want to use up the time.
Yeah, you're trying not to run the bill up here, and if you're calling on your own nickel.
And if it's on my time, then I can't run my cell phone because I've only got 500 minutes and I need to use it for business. So I use my friend's free long distance landline, and that's why I'm not being cut off tonight. Which, you know, I haven't lost my stream either, because if there's a shrimper out in the Gulf and they've got Wi-Fi or something, I get interference from the boats out in the water, and so then I get a choppy stream because they're shrimping, and, you know, what can you do about that? You can't complain much about that, right?
At least not in theory.
Well, I expect it's 20 till. I hope somebody else calls in with a different subject than mine.
Well, thanks for bringing up the stuff at the front end of the program, Kate, seriously, because I want people to understand what the nature of the fight is here where mountaintop removal is concerned. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I guess there's not a lot for people to maybe say right offhand.
No, actually, there's no context to hook on to, actually. No,
and I mean, I can't find the audio of the radio ads, but they're even sleazier.
Oh.
Environmentalists, you know, I personally think somebody like probably me, if I had the time, should file an attorney general complaint for the practices in these radio ads, because it never says this is a dramatization or this isn't reality or we were on acid for 8 days before we recorded this commercial or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, liberal environmentalists are using the court to make sure that you can't. And it starts out with a woman who's calling. And the person, you know, it's obviously someone in the call says, hello, power company, how may I help you? And the person on the other end says, where'd my electricity go? I ain't got no electricity. And the woman on the call center says, well, you see, the liberal environmentalists have used the court system to make sure that you can't have electricity because they don't want us mining coal anymore in West Virginia. That's why you don't have any electricity.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And so, you know, this is the reason Coal River Mountain Watch, our dear friends, have gotten on board here, is because this is an attempt to grow the awareness of people about what's going on here, because just because it's going on here doesn't mean it's not affecting you there.
Well, like I said, there's a lot of people who couldn't find West Virginia on the map simply because they don't know anything about that part of the country.
Well, but they do have they do have an aunt in Roanoke.
Pardon me? They have a what?
They've got an aunt in Roanoke.
Oh, everybody does.
Yeah.
Mine are all dead. But anyway, they don't have any historical or geographic or social context to hang it on to, and so it's just hard to get people interested. The same way with hurricane relief. People, even everybody I've talked to who have relatives up north or somewhere else, say, yeah, I just try to explain to people how bad it is, and they think that because back we're doing just fine down here. And I said that's exactly how the governor wanted it to do, and it went down that very, very way. And so we just have to keep talking about how bad it is down here, and how the circumstances are getting worse. The people are getting deader, they're getting sicker, they're getting more desperate, and it's pretty awful. It's just awful. And I thought I wanted one, and in closing, as the Baptist preacher said, I've closed three times, I was going to take a trip, a short little 3-week trip up north, and may not do that now because that's kind of a gift, because I have got the women's coalition, or the empowering, whatever they're going to call themselves, is coming up Thursday morning, and the woman I'm working with, the kind of the village queen, the elder of the village of Moss Point, she announced it at her church on Sunday morning that they wanted to do this, and she said that the response was overwhelming. And she said, Kate, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to have a great big room, and the church doesn't even know we need the room on Thursday night. And it's just, I said, oh, Lord, have mercy. We have started something. So I think
it's always fun to watch that little spark first strike the tinder, isn't it?
Isn't it though? And I'm kind of grateful that I'm not going to get to head up, get on the road, because I'm going to be here to watch that turn into a little fire. And if only 12% of the population who are interested up to do anything, it's going to be at least 20 people. You know, it'll be pretty big, and I'm pretty excited about it. And yeah, I'm a grassroots startup person. I start the fire and then leave, and so that's why my screen name is like it is. So anyway, I just want to encourage people to please send some money in and look around to see what you spent extra on this week, and maybe next week you could send that $5 or $7 or $20 into the horn so we can keep it going. So Rick's offer is only going to last for 1 month, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, all right. I'll get a man right on it. All right, well, thanks for taking my call. It's good to talk to you. And give Agnes a hug for me, please.
I sure will, but not too tight.
But not too hard. Yeah, not too. A little bitty bee. Don't hurt the girl.
We'll give her a Laurel and Hardy handshake.
There you go. All right, well, take care, and I'll be, I'm still out here in the ether doing my deal.
Okay, I wait all night for calls like these.
Got it.
Bye now.
And I'm still smoking Chesterfield filters, you know.
And plenty of Java and Chesterfield Kings, I know. And the line that comes after it.
I'm out of here.
Bye now. Okay, enough inside baseball. Those are all lyrics from Donald Fagen's The Nightfly, which is like sort of my little personal anthem. Are you still with us? Ah, you quit. Yeah, you quit. Doggone it, I'm sorry. Let's see. The Republicans are calling the race for McCain in New Hampshire, but New Hampshire has had a man crush on John McCain since 2000, so who's surprised? Yeah, Cossack, true. Looks like McCain is number one, though. I think he's number two. Whew! Yeah, good stuff. Other things, you all know the story of former Halliburton KBR employee Jamie Lee Jones, raped, beaten, and thrown in a container, a shipping container, for 24 hours to, just for the afterglow, I guess. Oh, man, that was wrong. And, her right-wing Republican congressman has, of course, complained bitterly about it, even though he was part of the problem and not part of the solution. According to ABC News now, the Defense Department, its so-called top watchdog, that's what their copy says, the Defense Department's top watchdog has declined to investigate allegations of regarding the rape and basically kidnapping of Jamie Lee Jones. Department of Defense Inspector General Claude Kicklighter, probably ought to be renamed Kick Harder, said that because the Justice Department still considers the investigation into Jones's case open, there is no need for him to look into the matter. Yeah, because the Justice Department's going to get it right. Yeah, sure. I'm sure there's a lawyer from the Jerry Falwell School of Law right on it. Jesus. In a separate letter, Kicklighter's office said the State Department has said its security officials had Jones's rape kit in their possession at one point. An Army spokesman referred questions about the rape kit to the State Department, which didn't respond to a request for comment. See how it works? Jiminy. And a couple of things... that's just too heavy. A couple of things from... no more Barack Obama's racist church. That's just too sickening. But another couple of things that actually popped up last week at the end of the program that I thought you might want to... I don't know. Maybe you've already heard about it. Maybe I'm just day late and a dollar short. From the Washington Post, Friday's issue. Headline: Video of sleeping guards shakes nuclear industry. Subhead slug. Homer Simpson says, "Don't." Kerry Beal was taken aback when he discovered last March that many of his fellow security guards at the Peach Bottom nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania were taking regular naps in what they called the ready room. When he spoke to supervisors at his company, Wackenhut Corporation. Wackenhut? Doesn't my wife get those catalogs from them? Wackenhut, you know, where you buy like little sewing notions and things for that hold up or press in, you know, girly stuff that you don't, that, you know, foundation garments and baby things and, no, that's Fingerhut, sorry. Wackenhut Corporation. When he told his supervisors at Wackenhut, they told him to shut up and be a team player. Then he contacted the regional office of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission contacted the plant's owner, Exelon, and Exelon told the Nuclear Regulatory Commission,
"We have found no evidence of guards asleep on the job."
So then Kerry Beal videotaped the sleeping guards. And Wackenhut wasn't interested, and the government wasn't interested, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission wasn't interested, and Exelon wasn't interested, and WCBS, the New York City flagship affiliate of CBS, turns out they were interested, and they showed the armed workers snoozing against walls, slumped on tabletops, or with eyes closed and heads bobbing. This is Peach Bottom in Pennsylvania. I don't know how far it is from Three Mile Island, frankly, but it may be 500 miles away, but it's not very far in spirit. I'm informed by our news ninja Gene that Wackenhut also handles security for Portland's TriMet public transit. You know, there are reasons to be afraid of terrorist attacks, but it really doesn't have that much to do with the terrorists. It has to do with the people who are supposed to protect us from the terrorists. So there's your picture. All these years that we have watched with a sort of wry gleefulness as Homer Simpson falls asleep in front of the control panel there at Mr. Burns's nuclear power plant. And we thought, ha, 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 even though we found out later on. Do you remember the early seasons of The Simpsons where there's a shot in the opening credits of a three-eyed fish swimming in the water near the nuclear power plant. Did you ever notice that the three-eyed fish disappeared from the opening credits? Do you know why? Well, it was because the nuclear industry complained to Fox Television about the three-eyed fish near the nuclear power plant and the implication thereof. All those years that we have sat in our easy chairs, grinning wryly to ourselves, sometimes laughing out loud. I'm especially fond of Apu Nahasapinapetawan when he looks at Homer and Homer says, "Hey, Ganesh, you want a peanut?" And Apu says, "Please do not offer my god a peanut." I love that. All those years that we chuckled away, guess what? It was reality, baby. Oh, yes, sunshine, it was reality. Because what was going on in Peach Bottom wasn't just going on in Peach Bottom. Peach Bottom. It sounds like a lovely place to live. Or, well, never mind. The fallout of the broadcast is still being felt. Exelon, last month, the country's largest provider of nuclear power, fired Wackenhut, which had guarded each of its 10, each of its 10 nuclear plants. The NRC is reviewing its own oversight procedures, having failed to heed Beal's warning. Let's take a little TV timeout here, shall we? The reason the Nuclear Regulatory Commission ignored Beal's warning has nothing to do with their oversight procedures. It has to do with the mindset, the philosophy, if you will. Jesus Christ is my favorite philosopher. The philosophy, if you will, of the Bush administration, which says regulation is bad for business. It hinders business growth. It hinders the kind of the innovations that we want to have in the nuclear industry. It's nothing to do with oversight. It has everything to do with the mean-spirited, hard-hearted, bug-eyed, freakish, free market, loving, licking monsters that inhabit the halls of power under this misbegotten, benighted administration. Jesus, how hard is this to figure out? The most immediate impact has been felt at Wackenhut, which protected half of the nation's 62 commercial nuclear power plants. Exelon's decision to terminate Wackenhut's contract reduces the number of commercial sites protected by the company to 21. Oh, great. There are still 21 nuclear power plants protected by Wackenhut. Sleep tight tonight, America. And hell, you know, you'll never feel the radiation hit you. I love, you know, there are people out there who make occasionally cogent arguments for an expansion of our nuclear power industry. And a lot of them frequently say that, and these are primarily right-wingers, you know, the same people that opened up their wine bottles and poured perfectly good Merlots and Cabernets and Pinot Noirs through the gutters when France just refused to join us in the illegal attack on the people of Iraq and changed the name of French fries to freedom fries and the name of French toast to freedom toast in the cafeteria at the Capitol. Those people, well, you know, France gets 80% of its electricity from nuclear power. But the problem is, with these free marketeers, what they fail to understand is that the French Navy, primarily, are the ones who run the French nuclear power program. And they've never really had a disaster, because it is, in fact, run by people who believe that government can be a solution and not a problem. You know, liberté, égalité, fraternité, you know, that whole thing. This Wackenhut thing, sleep tight tonight, America, this Wackenhut thing is a direct and proximate result of nothing more and nothing less than our sick fascination with the free market. That's all. That's all. How hard is that to comprehend? This is what happens when you let free marketeers run wild. Because to actually pay the whack and hut people to stay awake, well, you know, that cuts down on the quarterly profit margin for Exelon Corporation. Jesus, Exelon Corporation. They sound like they're more likely to be selling vacuum cleaners, for God's sakes. But that's not all. That's not all. There's also headline from the Associated Press, American Airlines to test anti-missile system. Huh? American Airlines to test anti-missile system, move latest phase in testing technologies to protect commercial jets. Up to 3 American Airlines jets carrying passengers, that's the real kicker for me, carrying passengers, will be outfitted with anti-missile technology this spring in the latest phase of testing technology to protect commercial planes from attack. Because, you know, we've just got planes falling out of the sky. These guys are going to be on the route between New York and San Francisco. A Boeing 767-200 equipped this April or later by American Airlines with this sort of laser technology that will shoot missiles out of the air. Anybody remember the Lusitania? I mean, not remember, that generation's kind of past now, but familiar with the Lusitania? Sunk by the Germans because it was carrying war materials to Germany's enemy, and this passenger ship had therefore been deemed to have been militarized? Mm-hmm. Well, when you hang anti-missile technologies on commercial jets, you're kind of militarizing them too, aren't you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. American Airlines says it does. This is the part that I don't get. American said it is not in favor of putting anti-missile systems on commercial planes, but agreed to take part in the test to understand technologies that might be available in the future. If you don't want them, why are you playing? And if they're available in the future, but you still disagree with, I mean, is it going to change? Is it going to be better to have these basically military systems built onto the commercial airliners? If you do that and you start doing, you know, you put it on planes that are making the run from, say, Baghdad to Karachi, and somebody shoots it with a Stinger missile and the laser thingy doesn't work and they put out a press release, you know, because you know, the terrorists are good at that. They understand their PR, saying, you know, this wasn't a commercial aircraft. You can see it had anti-missile technology on it. Legitimate target. I think that's the phrase they use. Legitimate target. God save us from the morons. We are beset by a confederacy of dunces. And a quick reminder for you. You remember when B.J. Godmanson was on the program with us a couple of months back? Well, the film of her personal journey to understanding mountaintop removal called Rise Up West Virginia, she talked about it on the program, said it wasn't done yet. Well, it's done. And it premieres this Saturday, January 12th at 7 p.m. at South Charleston Museum at the LaBelle Theater in South Charleston, West Virginia, sponsored by the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition and Christians for the Mountains. Music at 6:30 by T. Page Dalporto, August Godmanson, and Jim Savarino. That'll be fun, too. So if you're in the area, and it'll be a good time, and it's a great movie, because BJ doesn't do bad work. And after that, we'll have her on the show. And even if you're not in the South Charleston vicinity, you know what? You'll be able to get the movie. Cool, huh? So thanks, everybody. It sure was nice getting back tonight. We'll be back tomorrow night as well. Coming up, a repeat of the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, with your host, Peter Godbold. I was going to say, you know, like I said, Peter's down in the back. Lumbago's acting up. After that, the horn section, and then All Foxed Up with John Fox. Man, what a thing we've got going on here. Thanks to Ben Birch. Get to feeling better, brother. And always, always, always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you. Corsmo, Deputy Chief of Staff, Department of Labor, helped her husband, see John Corsmo above, with his donor dodge. Quietly left her labor plum job in February 2004, where she spent every day of her life.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said that parliamentary elections will take place in mid-February. That's about a month later than planned, President Bush urging Musharraf to hold the polls on time and end martial law. Emergency rule could be lifted soon in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi. Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili promised to end a 15-day state of emergency after stating that presidential elections would be held in January instead of late next year. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said today the House will vote on a $50 billion war funding bill as soon as tomorrow. The amount is about one-fourth the size President Bush has requested for the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. In northern Italy, a U.S. Black Hawk helicopter crashed this morning, killing five U.S. military personnel and injuring another six. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told lawmakers on Capitol Hill that the U.S. economy does not appear headed for recession. In an address to the Congressional Joint Economic Committee, Bernanke cautioned that growth would be slow but positive and inflation higher. He also said that a housing slump would intensify and that consumer spending could slow. Huge petroleum reserves have just been discovered off the south shore of Brazil, according to the country's national oil company. Those reserves could produce up to 8 billion barrels of light oil and natural gas, placing Brazil in the same league as the Arab states and Venezuela. A federal grand jury indicted former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick for tax evasion. Carrick's nomination to be the first head of Homeland Security was withdrawn when he was publicly accused of misconduct. In California, military police from the National Guard cleared of criminal charges after having been accused of stealing donations meant for victims of Southern California fires. An investigation showed the soldiers did take the items, but were invited to do so by relief workers. A container ship struck one of the Bay Bridge towers yesterday, spilling 58,000 gallons of oil into San Francisco Bay. The accident occurred in heavy fog. Several beaches now closed in that area. Wildlife is threatened. Authorities are working on cleaning up that spilled oil. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is just ahead, but first, this message.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light. This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches